Hi, this is Doug Podell. Thanks for listening to WRIF Online. Don't forget, while you're online, to check out the Riff Concert page. It's the Motor City's best for complete rock concert information. For more details, just click on the Riff banner on your Windows Media Player.
The Singular Wireless Concert Connection from Singular Wireless, raising the bar at 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
$50,000 toward college tuition.
No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st. Open to U.S. residents 18 and over. For rules and alternate entry details, visit MediaPlay today or MediaPlay.com.
MediaPlay CDs and DVDs, $8.99. Hurry to MediaPlay Halloween headquarters and don't be scared. Our CDs and DVDs are $8.99, and all our costumes are up to 50% off. Located in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
I think most of us chose University of Detroit Mercy for one reason.
I want to do great things.
I want to do great things.
My dream is to become an acclaimed scientist or a physician.
I want to build the tallest building in the world.
I hope to make a positive impact in preserving the environment.
UDM has challenged me to think in a new way.
I want to create more vibrant, livable cities.
I'm going to use my computer background to go into criminal justice.
I want to find a new treatment for cancer.
UDM has given me the creative freedom to find my own path.
My greatest dream right now is to be a forensic psychologist.
I hope to go to law school and then end up in the House of Representatives.
I want to be the best nurse possible.
UDM has allowed me to challenge myself.
For me, there are no limitations.
University of Detroit Mercy, udmercy.edu. We want great things for you.
I just have hope that I can change the world in some kind of way.
Call UDM today to reserve your spot at an upcoming visit day. Financial aid and scholarships are available for qualified students. Call 1-800-635-5020 for more information.
Welcome to the award-winning Night Call, the Riff's phone-in talk show on 101 WRIF Detroit. Our number, 313-298-WRIF. Now, here's the host of Night Call, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Welcome. A pleasure to be with you. As always, 2 hours of hot conversation, me and you. That's right, 313-298-WRIF. And we talk about the issues of the day. The Bush administration looks like it's going down in flames. Indictments sure to hit this week over this. You know, if you don't know about this incident, it is so complicated. It started off with the internal machinations of the Bush gang, Bush Co., trying to discredit a critic of the lies they put forth about weapons of mass destruction. In the process, probably emanating from Dick Cheney's office, they released the name publicly of a covert CIA agent. Well, that turns out to be against the law. But in the meantime, there was such cover-up and other shenanigans that a federal prosecutor, a special prosecutor, undoubtedly will bring indictments this week. And as David Gergen said, he is has been an advisor, I think, to four presidents, including President Reagan. He said the wheels are off the Bush administration. So we'll see how that comes down. Now, also, we're coming up to a grim number, 2,000 American dead in Iraq. I mean, we don't count the civilians that are killed there by the U.S. invasion, the illegal invasion that that Bush lied about. We'll talk more about that a little later. Also, class war continues, the war of the wealthy, led by Bush Co. against the middle class and the working class. And in response, we, the middle class and the working class, complain. All right? Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. That's email. Calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Now, James Moore, writing in on the Huffington blog, Arianna Huffington, it's HuffingtonPost.com, if you want to take a look at it. Jim Moore says, what's coming up is the most important criminal case in American history. That's probably right up there, isn't it? This scandal of the Bush administration that undoubtedly will lead to indictments is way beyond any Watergate. It's way beyond any Monica Gate. This involves, just read a word or two. If Special Counsel Patrick Fitzgerald delivers indictments of a few functionaries of the Vice President's office or the White House, we are likely to have on our hands a constitutional crisis. The evidence of widespread wrongdoing and conspiracy is before every American with a cheap laptop and a cable television subscription, and we do not have the same powers of subpoena granted to Fitzgerald. We know, however, based on what we have read and seen and heard, that someone created fake documents related to Niger and Iraq. See, remember the big Bush lie? Remember Condi, the big liar, who's now you commit errors at best and you lie at worst, and in Bush Co. you get elevated. Why? Because you're loyal. It's like the mafia. That's why a colleague of mine, Mike Malloy, calls the Bush government the Bush crime family. I mean, among other reasons. And so she was the one that always was saying, we don't want the smoking gun to be a mushroom cloud. Scared the hell out of a lot of people. I mean, particularly people that didn't take the time, as most of us don't, because a lot of us don't even have the time, to really look deeply into things. And who would have thought that a president of the United States and his staff were putting forth knowingly bald-faced lies? Now, you say, well, they had bad information. How come I knew there was no weapons of mass destruction? How come probably three-quarters of this audience that's very savvy knew that? Now, I'm not trying to make fun of you if you believed all that BS, because, again, I mean, you think, hey, these people have suits on. They've got little American flag pins on their lapel. They were ostensibly, let's say, elected to office. They're the representatives of the most powerful empire the world has ever seen. Would they lie to us? No, we were talking about that last week. Assume that they're lying to you. And if there's a Democrat up there, assume he's lying to you, too. Until you get independent facts, if you don't have them, particularly in really important matters of peace and war, at least abstain or withhold judgment. Figure, remember, you know, the old Who song, Won't Get Fooled Again? I mean, how many times are some of you going to sing that? Well, you got fooled. Right. All right. Here's what's going on. We know, however, based on what we have read and seen and heard, that someone created fake documents, and this is coming out of the the White House, fake documents related to Niger and Iraq, and used them as a false pretense to launch America into an invasion of Iraq. And when a former diplomat, Mad, made an honest effort to find out the facts, a plan was hatched to both discredit and punish him by revealing the identity of his undercover CIA agent wife. Patrick Fitzgerald, the prosecutor, has before him the most important criminal case in American history. Watergate, remember that was Nixon, that drove Nixon out of office. By comparison, was a random burglary and an age of innocence. The investigator's prosecutorial authority in this present case is not constrained by any regulation. So we will see as this week goes on. Let's see what else is underneath this. Oh, yeah. I put this from The Nation. You can always go to thenation.com. You should get that magazine, subscribe to it, read it every week. Corrupt, incompetent, and off-center. Now, why do I have this in the same folder? Anyways. Here is the liberals' problem in a nutshell. More than 30% of Americans happily answer to the label conservative, while only 18% call themselves liberal. And yet, when questioned by pollsters, a supermajority of more than 60% take positions liberal by anything but name. Indeed, on many, if not most, issues, Americans hold views well to the left of those espoused by almost any national Democratic politician. I mean, for instance, almost every one of us want a national health program. We'll get into that a little later and what's happening to us. In a May survey published by the Pew Research Center for the People and the Press, 65% of respondents said they favor, oh, here it is, providing health insurance to all Americans, even if it means raising taxes. And they probably mean, or we probably mean, on ourselves. But I say we ought to have a national health program and cut taxes on the middle class and the working class. We said, wait a minute, how can we do that? Doesn't that sound like Bush? We're making huge expenditures, and you're talking about cutting taxes. If there was a fair, progressive tax on the wealthy and on corporations, we could afford everything and probably cut taxes, beginning with incomes below $75,000, or at least $50,000. How about this? 86% of us said we favor raising the minimum wage. 75% say they believe the country, quote, should do whatever it takes to protect the environment. A September Gallup poll finds that 60% consider the Iraq war a mistake, and 63% agree that the U.S. forces should be partially or completely withdrawn. Do these people in Washington represent anybody except their twisted selves? I don't think so. All right, 313-298-WRIF. Now, this old adage, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Here's where our tax dollars are going. I mean, this may be nothing, given the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been wasted by Bush Co. And as always, in the Iraq War, $200 million, $300 million, depending on how you account it. And the General Accounting Office says it may top out at $700 billion. And you've probably heard the phrase, down a rat hole. This will be hundreds of billions of dollars of the money that we sweated for, that we worked hard for, that we could have used for something else rather than an illegal invasion of this nation that never did anything to us and the whole basis of it being illegal based on lies. All right, this is this is chump change here in this article. See, I mean, I look at different things, like defiant Saddam Hussein lashes out at U.S. and goes on trial. So it's all about that, you know, him saying that he wasn't guilty. He says the invasion, he's the court is a pawn of American aggressors. So, yeah, we maybe know about that. But here's what it says. The long-awaited start of the trial, after a year of planning and outlays of $138 million in American financing. Think about what's happening to this country. What's happening to wages? What's happening to our infrastructure? What's happening to our health costs? What's happening to our schools, our roads, everything like that? The cost of gasoline. And we just blew and this is for starters, right? $138 million on the trial of Saddam Hussein. I thought Iraq was a sovereign country. Why are we spending diddly squat on a trial? I mean, where could this money go? Well, for one thing, there's I think it's hundreds. I'm trying to recall this, but of Americans who are picking up salaries, they're over there as part of this legal team, right? So it's an American prosecution. So Saddam Hussein is right. Yeah, even a broken clock is right twice a day, right? So he says he doesn't recognize the court's authority because it's a pawn of the American aggressors. Well, maybe you can think of another word. However, what do you call a country that invades another country under false pretenses for the idea of setting up an imperial outpost? Aggressors isn't too bad a word, is it? Now, $138 million, where in the world could that money have gone? All right, well, in this folder here, the poor get poorer, there's a lot more. Here's what's happening. As we're spending $138 million to prosecute Saddam Hussein, little brother Jeb, you know, Jeb Bush down in Florida, the Bush administration approved a sweeping Medicaid plan for Florida. Let's put some more accurate language into that. The Bush administration approved a sweeping Medicaid plan put together by his little brother on Wednesday that limits the spending for many of the 2.2 million beneficiaries there and gives private health plans new freedom to limit benefits. So in one of the poorer states, which Florida is, has a large number of poor people, I mean, think about that, 2.2 million people that are eligible for Medicaid. Sort of this is welfare. The Florida plan likely to be a model for many other states, And hey, think Michigan could be one of them? Shifts from the traditional Medicaid defined benefit plan to a defined contribution plan under which a state sets a ceiling on spending for each recipient. So don't get real sick if you're poor, because you're screwed then. Family values. Right? Yeah. Let's see here. A big business coalition led by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the National Federation of Independent Businesses, the National Association of Manufacturing, is pressing Congress to pass health care legislation that undermines the safety and security of the health insurance our families depend on. And these laws, which of course then are just gleefully passed by their stooges, they're not their stooges. I was going to say they're stooges in the Republican Party. They have a coincidence of interest. Most of these guys are real wealthy anyways. They represent the interests of big business, not of the average person. So here's what these new laws would do. They would severely restrict coverage for critical preventative health care, such as mammograms and yearly child checkups. This means that companies could raise your rates at any time and deny your claim with no guaranteed right to appeal. This is what's happening in America. This is class war. This is the wealthy have declared class war, as they've always done. Since the beginning of classes, that's why there's classes, an upper class, a middle class, or if you want to go in real traditional terms, there's a ruling class and a working class. I mean, we're, most of us are working class. I mean, we don't like that. We say we're middle class, working class. It gets pretty confused in America. But ultimately, the people that own have different interests than the people that work and get paychecks. And it's always a fight for the wealth produced. And when capitalism began, of course, it was such a nightmare, such a horror show of 14-hour days, 8-year-old kids working, no, zero safety or health considerations, terrible produced products and all of that. And after a century of fights and hundreds of working people shot down in the streets by the police, the National Guard, and the private armies that the bosses put together, finally we pulled together a modicum of a somewhat decent guaranteed standard of living. That's for the United States. I mean, the rest of the world, of course, was screwed. Even that's beginning to erode now. And this is like the 1890s. This happened then as well. There was I don't want to go a whole history thing. If you haven't read Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States, Howard Zinn, Z-I-N-N, People's History of the United States, get it. And then, though, the workers fought back. They fought back in the 30s, our grandfathers and people like that. Now, we're a little PO'd. I mean, they're pulling the rug out from under us. They're telling us they're cutting our wages by 2/3. They're not going to make good on their pensions. They're cutting our health benefits, and we complain. Well, I would suggest class warfare demands class warfare back. That doesn't mean fighting. Doesn't mean getting guns or anything like that. Well, Pete, what does it mean? Well, listen. I'm not going to be the general in the workers' side of class war. I'm a little suspicious of anybody that would say that's what they're going to do. But people throughout history have been extraordinarily innovative about when it becomes really necessary to defend their interests. When they don't, it's just down the tubes. All right, that's one. Let's see. How are things going here? Oh, yeah. Also, Bush Co., heating fuel's way up, and the Republican Congress does not want to approve an additional $3 billion in federal heating subsidies that would help meet the coming need. This is for 7 million low-income people, which includes old people, disabled people, and families with children. This is on top of course, big gas prices. And at the same time, Republican majorities in Congress are unrelenting in their drive to pass $70 billion in new tax cuts this fall, most of them for wealthy investors. I mean, can you believe, and $35 billion in spending cuts, most in programs that benefit the poor. So we're back to the 19th century. And they look around and they say, are there millions in the street? No. Do we have an opposition party worthy of the name that's going to try to capitalize on the fact that we're launching this full-scale attack on the living standards, and it's not just the poor. I mean, when when Delphi does what it does, when General Motors does what it does, that's going to affect all of us. There's hunger in Michigan. Some people trying to meet the need by giving food to people, obviously, but what we have to do is look at the root to think, why is there a need for Big Boy and Channel 7 and the Boy Scouts and Reinhardt Food Service and Hunger Action Coalition of Michigan to have to feed so many people? This is the wealthiest country in the world, and in Michigan, 1 in 13 Michigan residents use emergency food banks. Imagine that. 30% of the state's unemployed who seek emergency food were once employed in skilled or professional jobs. 313-298-WRIF. You can get on the lines right now if you have something to say, questions or comments. 39% of households using emergency food have at least one person employed, which talks to how low the pay rate is. Let's see. Reports indicate that about 1.8 million Michigan residents miss an average of 4.5 meals a week. Almost 2 million people in Michigan miss almost 5 meals a week because of the economic state. 66% of people using emergency food are high school graduates. You know, all this thing. it's just the poor. They haven't tried, you know, and all that crap. Pardon me. God, it's getting to be winter already, isn't it? Since 2003, the Hunger and Homeless Survey reported a 37% increase in the number of families seeking emergency food. This is more in Bush's America. 33% of food insecure Detroit residents report having little or no money for food after paying for housing, utilities, and transportation costs. I mean, this is a disgrace. This is, it's not a disgrace to the people that are actually suffering. But the fact that we're number one, what are we number one in? Homeless, number one in people that face hunger, number one in people that miss meals. 22% of food insecure Detroit residents would not be able to afford necessary medications without food assistance. But, hey, some things are still growing. The U.S. prison population continued to grow in 2004. This is even with crime reducing. Pardon me. I'm going to need you on the air real soon. 313-298-WRIF. The U.S. prison population, already the largest in the world, hey, we're number one, grew by almost 2% in 2004, leaving federal jails at 40% over capacity. Hey, let's build some more. Don't we operate on a prison industrial complex? According to the International Center for Prison Studies at King's College in London, there are more people behind bars in the United States than any other country. That includes China. China has 1.3 billion people. We have almost 300 million, and they only have 1.5 million. We have 2 million. More than that. Sorry, that was 1.9%, almost 2%. Inmates in federal, state, local, and other prisons total 2.3 million at the end of last year, the government said. The five states with the highest incarceration rates were all in the South, led by Louisiana. Gee, I wonder if there's any racial factor here. Nah, probably not. Five states with the lowest rates were all in the North, with Maine experiencing the best. The U.S. prison population continued to grow last year, even though reports of violent crime during 2004 were at the lowest level since the government began compiling statistics 32 years ago. Do you think maybe we could get rid of, for starters, the drug war? This ridiculous, another one of, and Bush continues this, Clinton did it, they all did it, starting with Nixon, wasting money that we could have had a national drug program. National medical program that included national pharmaceutical drug program. Instead, we'd created this prison industrial complex. We corrupted our police. In fact, tonight, I forgot about that. Yeah, we have, let me see if I can remember his name. What's his first name? He was the ex-police chief of Seattle. And he calls for the complete legalization of all drugs treated as social problems, not criminal problems. But the group that he's associated with, the Drug Policy Alliance, says that billions of dollars could be generated for Katrina and Rita relief by implementing the worst three most wasteful drug war programs that are worth $8.4 billion. Oh, I'm sorry. This is a Republican study committee suggests that. The Drug Policy Alliance advocates cutting five ineffective programs worth $22 billion. $22 billion! Think about your part in it, my part in it. Think about what you could have used that for yourself if taxes were cut to that much, or better yet, if they were done that something that was socially useful. One of the things they want to cut are these ridiculous, stupid ads that you hear like on this station and other stations that are purchased with our tax money. And one of the things they really want to be very hip, right? So what they do is they name all these drugs. And essentially what goes on here is they are educating people about drugs they never heard of before. I mean, I'm listening to this list of drugs. I'm going, what the hell is that? I got to ask some people. I know some people that are, I don't know if they're druggies, but they're pretty savvy about drugs. I don't even want to mention them because I'll be giving out that information. But the drug war is a catastrophic failure. Absolutely. It's made criminals of millions and millions of our citizens, wasted $1 trillion of our tax money. And so that ought to be step one in getting rid of that. All right, I'm Peter Werby. This is the Night Call Show. You're listening to WRIF in Detroit. Welcome to people listening on the Internet. And welcome to Donna and Ray. They live in Stray Cat, U.S. Virgin Islands. They're listening on the Internet. And also to Anu and Viva, listening in Liberty, Tennessee. So we have people from all around the country and also all around the world. All right, let's go ahead. Here is Lisa from Ida, Michigan. Lisa, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air.
Hi. I fully agree with what you said about the National Health Care Plan. I find it disgusting that we're, to my knowledge, the only country. I know Great Britain has it, France has it, Germany has it,
Canada
has it, but we don't. And I shake my head and wonder why, because, who knows, that could be you or me next to, I don't know. And we need to do something about it.
Lisa,
blows my mind.
Yeah, right now we cannot afford it. I mean, if we want to have this bloated military budget that's $500 billion a year that could be probably cut by 80% easily, if we're going to fight a war costing hundreds of billions of dollars, if we're going to fight a drug war costing billions and billions, we can't afford a national health program. So we really have to make a choice. Either we've got to do all these wasteful things that only benefits like corporations, or do we want to use our tax dollars to help our communities and help ourselves and help our families?
Well, what we need to do is reprioritize and say, okay, is this necessary? Is this necessary? Is this necessary? And start cutting.
Sure.
And that's, basically the only way you're going to get it. Or charge exorbitant taxes, which I know they do in Canada. I don't know what their tax rate is exactly right offhand. But I'd be willing, personally, me, myself, I'd be willing to pay more in taxes to know that, hey, the system isn't perfect, but it's something, and something fairer than nothing.
Well, Lisa, I don't know if you heard me earlier, the majority of people said they would be willing to pay more taxes for a national health program, but we pay enough taxes now, and there's enough wealth in this country, as I said, that you could probably have somewhere like a $50,000 tax deduction before people even began needing to pay taxes if the rich and the corporations paid a decent portion of their income as taxes. And they would still be rich. They would still be wealthy. I mean, you have people running around here worth billions. I mean, they don't need that kind of money.
No, they don't.
I mean, they don't.
It's them.
Exactly. It used to be, up till 1960, that everything over $6 million was taxed at 90%. And so this is 45 years later. 45 years later. I mean, you say over $10 million. So if you made over $10 million, you'd start paying 90% tax. Oh, poor babies. All the money they made is going to be taken. That's socialism. They'd still have enough money left to buy politicians and whatever else they want to buy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Lisa. Thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Ooh, we don't have our next sign up here, so I'm going to take somebody from Ortonville because there's a nice recreation area out there. Hi, Ryan. It's Peter Werby. You're on the air.
Oh, yeah. I just kind of wanted to go over a couple of things with you. I guess it kind of frustrates me that everybody blames Bush in particular, or the Republican Party in particular, on the oil problem.
Wait a minute, Ryan. Who's sitting up there in the White House?
Bush?
Yeah, okay. Go ahead.
Okay. A large part of our oil problem is that we're so dependent on oil. I would not say it's Chuck Bush's fault. Clinton didn't do much to start some energy bills. You know, that would be taking care of that, such as giving tax incentives for buying hybrid cars.
Wait, you say did or didn't? I mean, Clinton did have some modest things, but listen, I don't think we get very far saying, you know, Bush is okay because he's almost as bad as Clinton.
No, that's definitely not what I'm saying. I'm saying it's kind of everybody's fault. We all need to do our part and to take them away from OPEC. We can't all sit around and expect the government to babysit us.
I don't understand that. I mean, we have a severe class system based on wealth here. So you have the highest percentage of people in poverty. You just had the Republicans rejected a paltry raise in the minimum wage. So you have people that, even though they work, are in highly dependent states. And given the price of health care, of everything else, of fuel, babysitting is, it's just derogatory in an unnecessary way. I mean,
isn't that kind of what we're asking them to do when we're asking them to monitor how much every single company in the United States is going to charge people for their product?
Your phone kind of crackled out. We ask them what about corporations?
To watch exactly what the corporations are doing. Why don't we stop laying blame on the president and the office and start...
Well, wait a minute, Ryan. You know, Harry Truman used to have a sign on his desk that says, "The buck stops here." In other words, he wasn't always trying to shift the blame off onto somebody else.
No apologies. George W. taught me that.
Yeah.
I'm not shifting. No one's trying to shift blame. It's just... we have corporate America. You know, you talk about the Delphi and GM and the Big Three problems. Why don't we start blaming corporate, where, you know, these guys are still making a $250,000 a year, $500,000 a year, and their health incentives aren't getting cut, and it's the blue collar workers that aren't making anything that are struggling that are getting all their problems cut.
Well, now you're talking sense, right? These guys, the guys in the suits, made the mistakes. They made bad business choices. They made the wrong cars. They did something wrong. So, as usual, it's going to be the average person, the person that did everything they could to the best of their ability, as directed by the guys on top. So why are they the ones to suffer? I agree with you, Ryan. I got to take a break. Thanks for joining
Every
me.
Successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919. 101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play, with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
You're listening to WRIF.com.
25th. You can enter only on Thursday, October 27th. No purchase necessary. Licensed drivers only. See dealer for rules and entry form. Now, AC Plan employees can lease a 2006 Explorer XLT 4x4 for $249 a month for 24 months through Ford Credit with $1,909 due at signing. Payment includes a wage security deposit and excludes title taxes and license fees. Some payments higher, some lower. Residency restrictions apply. Not all licenses will qualify. You must take delivery by 10/31/05. See the 2006 Explorer and Ford Fusion on Thursday, October 27th. Premier night at your Metro Detroit Ford dealers.
The Buffalo Road Nautical Nightmare is back. And it's scarier than ever. Thursdays and Sundays from 7:30 to 11. Fridays and Saturdays from 7:30 to midnight. Boat parking at Bellinger Park in River Rouge. They call it a ghost ship. A 100-year-old steamboat vanished October 31st of 91 during a Halloween cruise to Bablo Island. Today, 14 years later, the ghost ship has reappeared out in the center of Lake Erie. Is she haunted? Is there really an actual demon on the lake? Are ghost demons and spiritual creatures living on board? Come see for yourselves. Or are you scared? Look for the ad in Fear Finder or stop by any Marathon station and pick up your $2 off coupon. The Bob Lobo Nautical Nightmare, Thursdays and Sundays, 7:30 to 11, Fridays and Saturdays, 7:30 to midnight. Boat parking at Ballinger Park in River Rouge. You'll find more information on the web at nauticalnightmare.com. I'm waiting.
Here's a question. What are you worth? I mean, what are you worth in the job market? What skills and knowledge do you possess that create value for a company? Do you have what it takes for employers to pay you $65,000 a year on average? Do you have what it takes to start right out of school making $30,000 or $40,000 a year? Have you positioned yourself in the fastest growing industry rated by the United States federal government? Good questions. Tough answers. If you're stuck making less than $45,000 a year with no way to increase your income, it's time to visit computertraining.com. Log on to their website at www.computertraining.com. And find out why their graduates are living their dreams by making an investment in themselves for a better tomorrow today. Please note up front that not everyone is qualified. You'll need to demonstrate that you have solid computer skills and a sincere desire to succeed in order to be accepted into their new Microsoft XP program. To learn more, visit www.computertraining.com and take the online entrance challenge. Again, that's computertraining.com, helping you build a better tomorrow today.
Computertraining.com does not guarantee job placement or job salary levels. Pay scales can be dramatically affected by employer size, industry, employee credentials, years of experience, and other factors.
Hi, Dad.
You're late.
Well, it's 2:03.
And I said, be at the Ram's Horn at 2 o'clock. When I was in the Army and they said 2 o'clock, you were there at 2 o'clock or else.
This isn't the Army, Dad.
You're telling me.
Well, say, I see we have coffee already.
I ordered coffee. The waitress brought it on the double. She could teach you a thing or two.
Well, the service at the Ram's Horn is always good.
They have a job to do and they do it. Unlike most kids of your generation.
I'm 45, Dad.
And you still haven't learned how to read a watch.
What looks good?
Are you kidding? Look at this menu. Everything from bacon and eggs to burgers to full course dinners.
Wow, there sure is a lot to choose from at the Ram's Horn, huh?
When I was in the Army, we had choices too. Like it or lump it.
Dad.
What?
This isn't the Army.
You're telling me.
Get a hearty 3-egg breakfast for just $2.99. That's 3 eggs with bacon, ham, or sausage plus toast. All for only $2.99. The Ram's Horn $2.99 breakfast. Weekdays 5 a.m. to 11 a.m. only.
The Ram's Horn. It's where to go when you're hungry.
You're telling me.
101 WRIF, Miller High Life, and the UAW wants you to roll and arrive and rock. And all for a great cause. It's the Rockin' Chopper Giveaway. The RIF is teamed up with Pole Boy Choppers to create a custom-built chopper.
See it built from the ground up with our chopper cam at WRIF.com.
Just purchase a $10 Rockin' Chopper raffle ticket. A portion of the proceeds will benefit the United Cerebral Palsy Foundation. One lucky ticket holder will win the ride in our big drawing in December. The Rockin' Chopper Giveaway. Brought to you by Miller High Life, Savor the Moment, the United Auto Workers, and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back. Email's starting to come in at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. Stephen Dearborn Heights writes, the Bush administration now wants to tax people that have health care benefits. Bad enough that if you want to self-insure your family, you'll have to pay upwards of $10,000 a year to do so. And now Bushco wants to tax you just simply because you have health care. Now, I'm not quite sure about that. This could be the elimination that Bush's tax advisory committee is has made, because they've got to find money somewhere. So what's the word? Bleeding money? No, what's that word? I can't. The United States is going deeper and deeper in debt. So one of the things our taxes go for is to pay interest on these loans, right? And depending on how old you are, you're going to be paying for it, your kids are going to be paying for it, your grandkids are going to be paying all of this. Country went from having a surplus under Clinton to Bush giving it all away to the wealthy and the surplus, and then starting this insane war in Iraq based on lies. But Bush's Tax Advisory Commission agreed today to recommend two alternative tax plans, both of which would limit or eliminate almost all tax deductions, including the ones for state and local income and property taxes. Remember, that's always one of the things. You say, well, it's good to own your own home because you can always deduct the property taxes that you pay and interest. Property taxes is another thing. I mean, on mortgage, that this would do that as well. State and local income and property taxes. And I'm trying to think about my paycheck. And now that you get direct deposit, I rarely even look at it. Just make sure the big figure's there. But they don't tax what you pay for health care. And this sounds like Stephen is saying that's what's in the works. All right, we said the Republicans defeated a proposal by Senator Edward Kennedy for an increase of $1.10 over a year and a half of the shameful, disgraceful minimum wage in the United States. Wouldn't it be nice to be number one? Why don't we have the highest minimum wage in the world? Anybody answer that? If we are the richest country in the world, why don't we have the highest minimum wage? Why does that honor go off to France or Germany or Denmark or Norway? Actually, I don't know. If anyone knows, 313-298-WRIF. So the rich are getting richer. The poor are getting poorer. The middle class standard of living is beginning to fray. I had some other facts around here, but what the hell? Let's get some of you on the air. It's a talk show, isn't it? We should be doing that. Here is Jim and LaPierre. Jim, it's Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air.
How you doing, Peter?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
Oh, man, I tell you, I am so disgusted to have George W. Bush in power and watch my paycheck literally be destroyed every week to accomplish nothing by the end of the week when I'd rather choose to enjoy that paycheck for me and my wife.
Sure.
And I swear I'm on a slightly better end of money, but it has taken me 33 years to get there. And like you said, I'm almost embarrassed to say that I'm an American citizen with the way Bush throws money around. We are the richest country, the strongest of all the nations. Yet, you know, like if I get insurance, I'm going to be, you know, paying out my tailpipes worse than I do now. Overall, and you know, what's to be next? You know, good God, is my religion going to be taxed as well for not being Christian or being Christian?
Well, you know, you can't tell. It's like I said at the beginning of the show, they look to see what's going to be the response, and if there's very little response from us, now the real question is, how do we respond? I mean, the UAW has just rolled over. They had no choice. I mean, if they would have said absolutely no to General Motors to increasing the contribution for their health care plan, which is essentially is a pay cut, so they've already taken a pay cut, they were afraid that it would just be imposed by the court. It went through Delphi, and they were afraid. I don't know why they rolled over for GM. I mean, they had a bad quarter.
I was rather surprised. My father put 20 years at Daimler Chrysler when the Hemis were first brought out. 23 years at Ford Monroe Stamping, and died 1993 before I turned 21.
Boy,
killing himself to keep me and my two sisters and mother afloat. Now I'm married at 33 and attempting to meagerly squeak by on $12 an hour. And between trying to drive 15 miles to my work to drive all night, which I'm doing right now, to bring home maybe $400 a week, it is just unrealistic to attempt to survive. And I've somehow managed to do it by thanks and grace of God.
Well, it shouldn't have to be either by the grace of God or by, I mean, some people, they have two jobs and three jobs. And I mean, that shouldn't have to be.
I feel that totally. I've had two jobs where, like, I work midnights right now, and I would go to my job in the morning half alive until 1 in the afternoon when that third wind kicks in.
Boy.
And half my day has been blown attempting to provide what little I attempt to require for me and my wife. And it's just embarrassing. And, you know, housing conditions are just plummeting around. I pay $535 a month for an apartment as big as a closet.
Hmm.
And I'm told I should enjoy this with a slumlord that I've come to recently find out is being attempted by Oakland County to be closed down because the place should be condemned. But nothing's happening and everything else. I'm like, you know, I really miss the days of, you know, Franklin and such when more, you know, artistic and beautiful words were used as was quoted in National Treasure, you know, to the degree that I almost think a revolution is almost in call anymore. To bring things back to right where we are of the people for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
We at least ought to threaten a revolution. That always makes them say, well, wait a minute. Let us see if we can raise your minimum wage. We'll say, we're going to have a revolution. They'll say, oh, how about if we have a couple dollar an hour minimum wage? Yeah.
Well, I know. It's embarrassing. I've lived for many a year not making more than $10,000 a year if I've made that.
Wow. Well, you know, Jim,
I'm lucky to see 24, you know, if my hours and gas doesn't kill my job.
Now here, I've talked some about this before. 50 years ago, and that's, you know, mid-20th century, so your parents or your grandparents, or whatever, that there was such wealth accumulation by the rich and by the corporations that they began sharing it. I mean, they weren't too willing to do it, but they had unions, and unions brought the wages of everybody, even the non-unionized people, up. And the increase of wages for working people was tied to their productivity. And as the wealth of the wealthy expanded, so they were willing to share, you know, at least a little bit of it with the middle class and the the working class. But they finally figured out that because I don't know, I mean, it's a long story. But well, in fact, let me go back a little. At one point, unions were going to start asking for a 35-hour work week with the 40-hour pay, that they said that they were creating so much, you know, that the economy was so robust that there was no reason that people should even have to work 40 hours. Because remember, it started off like at 60 weeks. They worked us like animals. They shot us down in the streets in the 1880s because people wanted the radical demand of a 40-hour week. And there it stayed for about 75 years. And of course, now it's going up again.
It's disgusting. My family was just coming over from Ireland around the 1890s,
yeah,
from County Cork. And, you know, my great-grandfather, Joseph McGrath, was, you know, becoming a butcher and a priest and a sheriff, attempted to sustain his family. I almost feel it's at that time, except, well, we have a higher standard of living, just the pay hasn't caught up yet.
There you go. All right. Good. Well, good luck on it, and at least, you know, it must be hard and galling at the same time. But some humor and eking out those small moments of enjoyment where we can and with our family is important until we figure out how to fight back. Thank you, Jim.
I appreciate it, Peter. Thank you very
Thanks for
much.
Listening. Thanks for calling. All right, so we're starting to hear the R word, right? Revolution. That's not so bad in America, right? When the people we admire so much, weren't they revolutionaries? It kind of got a bad name in the 20th century because people would have revolution and they turn into a police state. Well, we got to go back to the old tradition where revolutions made things more democratic, not less democratic. Well, what are the rich doing? Here's what they're doing. REFCO, that's REFCO, not to be confused with Bushco, a futures trading company that went public 2 months ago, ousted its chief executive after discovering that a firm he controlled owed the company $430 million. So Refco's shares fell 45%, reducing the company's market value by $1.65 billion. This is off like a financial page. I mean, if you start combing like the media for this kind of stuff. Refco said that Philip R. Bennett, the chairman and chief executive, had been suspended yesterday, although he repaid the $430 million in cash the same day. So here we have Jim, who we just spoke to, talking about bringing $400 in a week after busting his ass, living in a crappy apartment that probably should be condemned and the owner jailed. And Philip R. Bennett writes a check for $430 million. Said that Mr. Bennett was on leave. Where did it say? It's unclear how badly Refco had been damaged because the repayment of $430 million improved its liquidity. Do you think? I mean, this is what's happening. This is what's happening in our country. Jim, and many of you, I'm sure, take $12 an hour. Where do I apply? You'd be fighting for that. There's a job fair somewhere, I just heard on the news, Oakland County. 4,000 people showed up. So back to Refco, though. Sold shares to the public before they did, and then made the fourth largest bankruptcy filing in United States history. Insiders at the firm received more than $1 billion in cash. So these folks got a lot of cash floating around. The insiders grabbed off $1 billion. One insider, Robert Troston, received $45 million when he left his post as chief financial officer a year ago. So now, if you had this confiscatory tax that I'm suggesting on the ultra-wealthy, there wouldn't even be the impetus to do that. Because why would the guy want $45 million? Why would anybody want $45 million anyway? I mean, think about this. Think about you could have everything you want. It wouldn't come anywhere near $45 million. So what you have, though, is this looting of the classes below them. Because this is $45 million that could have been part of what raised any number of people's salaries when you start looking at it overall. All right, let's go to Mark in Walled Lake. Mark, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby with you. You're on the air. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Going terrific.
Alrighty, I wanted to talk about the trucking industry, actually. I wanted to shift gears a little bit, if
sure.
you don't mind.
Please do.
Alrighty, I just wanted to say, you know, everybody that buys products from any store, it don't matter which one, it all comes from trucks, basically, one way or another.
Shipping, yeah.
So, you know, as far as traffic goes, you know, everybody should really calm down and realize that they're only hurting themselves.
What do you mean, when they don't give trucks proper leeway and all that?
Exactly.
Okay.
And they want to cut everybody off. They got to understand that trucks need more room to stop and, you know, like that.
Wait a minute. You mean you're telling me, Mark, that people cut off these big 18-wheelers?
It happens every day.
Whoa. I think, whoa, that's a big truck. I don't even want to get near that.
It happens every day.
Yeah?
Any given hour. It's nothing unusual. I mean, but, you know, it kills me. People expect their stuff to be there at the stores at any given time, and they want their stuff when they want it, but at the same time, they don't want to give us the respect to get it there.
All right, well, let's do this. I'm going to put out a clarion call to all listeners in the Detroit area and listening across the country and across the world on the internet to give these folks not only the respect, but also the room, and use your head. I mean, every once in a while when these trucks go over, I mean, these are the best drivers around. I often suspect that probably the error of the automobile driver. All right, Mark, so we got it out for you. Thanks for driving. Thanks for getting all those goods where they belong promptly as you do. I appreciate it. Thanks for calling into 313-298-WRIF. Here is Scott in Detroit. Scott, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hey, Scott. Scott. Calling Scott. Calling Scott. Okay, no Scott. We got to go to spots. We'll be right back.
101 WRIF and Media Play present the Free U College Giveaway. Use your MasterCard or complete an entry form at Media Play, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 towards college tuition. No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st, 2005. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit your Media Play store today or log on MediaPlay.com or WRIF.com. Media Play with locations in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor. Want to get to the next level of your career? If working harder at your job won't help, work smarter by earning a bachelor's or master's degree at University of Phoenix, the nation's largest accredited private university. It's college designed for busy working adults. In most cases, you can earn a degree in only 2 to 3 years. To find out how, call 1-800-664-1391. At the University of Phoenix Detroit campus, the small classes are designed for working adults with busy lives. You'll cover more material in less time with convenient classes in the evening or on the weekend. At University of Phoenix, you can do this. Call now for a brochure on degree programs in business, technology, nursing, education, and more. 1-800-664-1391. Programs vary by campus. Call University of Phoenix now. 1-800-664-1391. That's 1-800-664-1391. They strut their stuff to the best live music out there. And every Thursday night, make sure you stop in for free pizza. Coming Friday, October 28th, reserve your spot now for a free complimentary wild game dinner. And of course, join Mark Fellhauer from the Drew and Mike Show this and every Tuesday night for Riff Night at Leopard's Lounge and Broil. Mark will be there to make sure you and your buddies always have a great time and leave with lots of cool free stuff. Guys, remember, at Leopard's Lounge, you never pay a cover charge, ever. They even have free parking and, of course, the most beautiful women in the world. Leopard's Lounge and Broil in Windsor, just 5 minutes from the bridge or tunnel at 1190 Wyandotte West. Call 1-888-653-8881 for Leopard's Lounge and Broil, where the party never stops. Transportation provided by Limousine Express.
It's finally here. Football. It's the most exciting season of the year, and you need to know the odds, the spreads, the favorites. But where do you go? It's easy. Bet on sports. 1-866-677-2388. Bet on sports. And their specialists will explain the points, the over-unders, even the difference between a parlay and a teaser. Know everything the odds makers know. Who's in, who's out, who's on injured reserve. Call 1-866-677-2388 and get updated info, points, and spreads. Don't get caught a day late and a buck short. Operators standing by 24-7. They're ready, willing, and able. Are you? Bet on sports. Call 1-866-677-2388. Literally everything you'll need to win is at Bet on Sports. 1-866-677-2388. So call 1-866-677-2388 and get off your butt and into the game.
Centerfold Lounge, Detroit's sexiest adult entertainment club, is celebrating their 20th anniversary. That's 20 years of hot ladies, rock and roll, and fun. Come celebrate with 20th anniversary specials and enjoy a complimentary buffet, buckets of beer for $20, and two for $20 dances. On Saturdays, take pleasure in half-off drink specials from 2 till 6 p.m. served by the most beautiful ladies. Bachelor and bachelorette parties are always welcome. Come play with Centerfold's fantasy tricks and naughty treats Halloween weekend. Friday, October 28th, and Saturday, October 29th, wear your costume and get in
and the door free. Come party with the devilish girls as they shake it up in their teeny little costumes, if they're wearing any at all. And prizes for the best costume. Centerfold Lounge, open Mondays through Saturdays at 2 p.m. and Sundays at 6 p.m. Call 313-892-7333 for more details. Centerfold Lounge 20th Anniversary and Halloween Party on John R., one block south of 8 Mile Road.
It's Media Play's Halloween Blowout. Costumes, masks, makeup, and decorations up to 50% off. And our $8.99 CDs and DVDs are just as shocking. Alicia Keys.
$8.99.
Bun B.
$8.99.
Ashley Simpson.
$8.99.
CDs and DVDs, $8.99.
Stevie Wonder.
$8.99.
Rebra.
$8.99. Martin McBride. CDs and DVDs, $8.99. It's the free U College giveaway. Use your MasterCard card or complete an entry form at MediaPlay, and you could win a one-time payment of $150,000 toward college tuition.
No purchase necessary. Ends December 31st. Open to U.S. residents 18 or older. For rules and alternate entry details, visit MediaPlay today or MediaPlay.com.
MediaPlay, CDs and DVDs, $8.99. Hurry to MediaPlay, Halloween headquarters, and don't be scared. Our CDs and DVDs are $8.99, and all our costumes are up to 50%. Set off. Located in Livonia, Utica, Taylor, Clinton Township, and Ann Arbor.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much, and welcome back to hour number two of Night Call. And thanks to all of you who are listening, not only in our immediate WRIF listening area, which includes a good part of southeastern Michigan, southern Ontario, and northern Ohio, but to all of you listening on the Internet as well, either at WRIF.com or at Radio Power. .org as well. And I forgot about this. Excuse me, from Bruce Birch. I just got this from Peter, who's listening in Tallahassee, Florida, and he wrote in the call talk yes at yahoo.com. He said, thanks for the great interview on All Things Reconsidered with Bruce Birch. I feel like I know you better, and it was perfect. That's right. I did an interview with him. Oh, man, I feel badly that I forgot to mention this. And I'm not quite sure how this goes, but anyways, if you Google All Things Reconsidered, then you'll that you can stream through there, and he streams the show. I'm not quite sure how this all goes, but I sure appreciate him having the interest to interview me and for giving me the ability to broadcast on All Things Reconsidered, which is a play on a news show on public radio. Well, Bush's Slaughtergate. This is the worst scandal of all. Of course, we're going to see some indictments come down for Bush Co. Hopefully it goes up into the White House itself. Dick Cheney behind this smear of people that exposed the administration's lies about Iraq. They didn't have any weapons of mass destruction, and everyone knows that, except there's a few people out there that still think, oh, maybe one day they'll find them. Got some email about that. Anyways, it's Bush's Slaughtergate. And remember Y2K, when the year 2000 and all that hoorah that went around about that about 5-6 years ago? Well, now the slogan is 2K. Why? 2K, meaning 1,000, and asking why. And there's going to be anti-war actions and demonstrations the day after the 2,000 U.S. soldier death in Iraq. And we're coming right up to it. I mean, what an occasion. And I think I've said this before. On my website, peterwerby.com, PETERWERBE.com, I keep this tabulation. And every day I adjust it, or every other day at least. And it's up to 1,996. And it's just numbers. But every once in a while, I click on that when I look at the website itself and how it's appearing. And then there's the faces of the men and some women that have died. And, of course, the tens of thousands of faceless Iraqis that nobody counts, and a whole population that feels just as badly as we do about it. Cindy Sheehan says she's when 2,000 military deaths occur, which probably will be today or tomorrow, she's going to chain herself to the White House and refuse to leave until they agree to bring our troops home. And the American Friends Service Committee I think these are Quakers, aren't they? Yeah, Friends, right. The human cost of a lie. On the day after the 2000s reported U.S. military death in Iraq, people will gather in communities across the U.S. to say the country's pro-peace majority wants Congress to stop the deaths by stopping the dollars that are funding the war. That's how we can do it. An article today from the Associated Press, the Iraq insurgency shows no signs of abating. In fact, it's growing. With the grim milestone of 2,000 American deaths looming in Iraq, many wonder about the direction of the insurgency that killed most of them. Experts think the country's increasingly regional-oriented politics, which is the constitution that Bush co-forced down their throats, will fuel the insurgency and even spread it further inside Iraq. Others towards forward a simple disquieting scenario. As long as the U.S. and other foreign troops remain in Iraq, the insurgency will continue. What would you do? What would you do if there were foreign troops in our country? And there was a secret poll taken by the Ministry of Defense of Britain. Tony Blair in on the big lie, right? Millions of Iraqis believe that suicide attacks against British troops are justified, according to the secret military poll. University research team did it. 45% of Iraqis believe attacks against British and American troops are justified, rising to 60% in the British-controlled Maysan province. 82% are strongly opposed to the presence of coalition troops. So why the hell are we there? 82% are strongly opposed to the presence of coalition troops. Why are we there? Why did we go there in the first place? Less than 1% of the population believes coalition forces are responsible for any improvement in security. 67% of Iraqis feel less secure because of the occupation. 43% of Iraqis believe conditions for peace and stability have worsened. 72% do not have confidence in the multinational forces. The opinion poll carried out in August debunks claims by both the U.S. and British governments that the general well-being of the average Iraqi is improving in post-Saddam Iraq. And we're spending $168 million to prosecute. Or was it 100? Let's go lowball. I can't remember. I'm doing this from memory. $138 million. According to USA Today, more than one in four U.S. troops have come home with the Iraq from the Iraq War with health problems that require medical or mental health treatment, according to the Pentagon's first detailed screening of service members. So 25% of our troops need medical attention. It comes out to, where did they say? Overall, since the war began, about 28% of Iraq veterans, about 50,000 service members this year alone, returned with problems ranging from lingering battle wounds to toothaches, from suicidal thoughts to strained marriages. The figure dwarfs the Pentagon's official Iraq casualty count, where they see 15,000 wounded. So there's up towards 18,000 American casualties. What the hell is worth there that justifies this? That justifies the death and wounds and destruction that's occurring there in that country? You tell me. Well, I don't know. This by Michael Schwartz, professor and author, who I'm going to interview next week. The U.S. military is already killing more civilian Iraqis than would likely die in any threatened civil war. The U.S. presence is actually aggravating terrorist violence, Iraqi on Iraqi, not suppressing it. Much of the terrorist violence would likely subside if the U.S. left. The longer the U.S. stays, the more likely that scenarios involving an authentic civil war will prove accurate. Man, and there's still, you know, who are these people that still support Bush? I don't get it. Well, here's one. Let me see. Christopher. If the poverty pimps, here's a word, it's kind of a, you know, has a lot of racist implications, from the 60s, could find a single person who was genuinely going hungry in America for economic reasons, he or she would be paraded on every television network for the next 10 years. What a heartless son of a bitch you are. Christopher, to put it quite bluntly. There are millions of people in this country that go to bed hungry or at risk of hunger. And why don't need to put them on television? Where was this was Operation Can Do, Big Boy in Channel 7. What are we, 1 in 13 American residents, Michigan residents, use emergency food banks. Where is this? 1.8 million Michigan residents miss an average of 4.5 meals per week. I mean, these are the kind of people, for instance, that that during the 1930s, the Christopher types had said, anybody can get a job that wants to, right? This is in the middle of the Depression. Absolutely heartless. Absolutely heartless. And he well, the only thing I'd sort of agree with, and people have been fed so much advertising crap-a-roo that if they adjusted their diet, they probably would be doing a lot better, both in terms of health statistics and, or health results and the ability to eat cheaper. But here is probably somebody who's at least waged enough that he doesn't have to depend on this. He says if people would eat rice and beans and flour, it's extremely cheap, and beef is inexpensive, da-da-da. So here is somebody lecturing the poor on better eating habits. Well, I'm not trying to say that education isn't necessary, but the heartlessness here is pretty repulsive. And then he says that the Canadian, the fully socialistic or socialist Canadian health system of health, quote, care, has shortages, waiting periods, and arrogant, incompetent personnel. I don't know. How do you know that? Well, I bet you if you talk to the 43 million people in this country without health insurance, they would even take Canadian insurance, health care, the way you define it. But one of the reasons that the General Motors is locating and relocating plants in Canada because they don't have to pick up health care. Let's see, Haffy writes in from the UK in England. He says, he heard me on the Mike Malloy show. Oh, good. If the wheels are really off the Bush administration, as you say, and Bush finds himself with his back to the wall, what's going to happen? I don't know. Won't he resign like Nixon did? Gosh, what makes Nixon look good by comparison? What next? Martial law? State of emergency? What do you think? Haffy, I hate to even guess. Is there anything more here I want to read? Here's an idea. Instead of protesting the White House when no one there listens, why don't we protest in front of the United Nations, writes Adam from Romulus. If 300,000 people stood in front of the UN demanding that they bring Bush up on charges for his illegal war, or Rummy for his crimes at Gitmo and Abu Ghraib, do you think they could ignore it? Well, I'm all for that. I mean, these guys are war criminals. The United States has become a torture state, pardon me, under these folks. Roger says, a short note to thank you for the interview you did tonight with Zappa for President on his web stream show. Maybe that's Bruce Birch. It was nice to hear you as a guest rather than the host. I'm 60 years old and I've spent many hours marching in the streets. You were very correct in that participating in marches is very uplifting. Thanks again. If you had an 800 number, I would have called. Well, it's kind of tough. Okay, let's... oh, boy. This guy's been waiting a long time. Jeff and Milan. Jeff, my apologies for keeping you so long, but welcome to the show.
Good evening, Peter. How are you doing?
Great. Thanks for joining us.
I wanted to get back on the war on the classes.
Sure.
What's going on with that? Is there any way we can fight this? What's going on? I mean, I'm looking at people losing their jobs because their plants are shutting down, getting sent down to Mexico or overseas, and they either take a pay cut or they lose their job to a foreign worker.
Yeah, on my island, big Ford plant there, right?
Yeah, they say that's on the verge, might be getting closed.
Man, just think what that would do, not only to the individuals who are going to suffer the most and their families, but the whole community there.
Yeah, that's 20% of our tax base.
Yeah, you know, I've told so many people this story. I don't remember whether I told it on the air, but every week I play handball with a bunch of guys. And after, they were saying, we're probably the last generation that's going to be assured of good wages, a pension, and Social Security. And I looked at him and I said, you really feel secure that we're going to have all that? And why should we live with this anywhere from anxiety to fear that the rug is going to be pulled out from under us?
Right.
It doesn't make a bit of sense. You know, there's an old saying that the world doesn't owe you a living. I think the world does owe you a living. That if we're going to live in this society and be productive, good citizens, that at least that the apparatus that they, you know, we didn't set this thing up, that they have set up with their big corporations and they make all the rules and they've got all the money, Well, what the hell? At least they should guarantee us a situation where we don't have to have these worries about, are we going to be able to feed our families? Are we going to get decent health care? Are we going to be able to drive without huge holes in the road? Are our kids going to go to school without 35 kids in the class? I mean, gee, is that too much to ask?
Right.
I don't think so. Go ahead.
Can we make an impact, though, by, I remember in the 80s, all the bumper stickers, be American, drive American, and
yeah,
buying all the American-made products, can that still have an impact on it?
It's almost like it's turned out to almost be a joke, Jeff, unfortunately, is that everything, I mean, they always say it's a global economy. So people that are making, $1,000 a week, they're now beginning to compete for the same job with people that are making $80 a week. So I don't mind saying I don't know. Usually what's happened, I mean, think about anything in history. Maybe the easiest thing would be the Revolutionary War. Well, here are people that were similarly pissed off at what was going on with the British Crown. They didn't have any organizations. They didn't have any groups or unions or anything. But they, out of necessity, they began to form things. And I'm not throwing it off on you or on me, but at some point, if grievances get so bad that there has to be something that will pop up. I mean, we've done that all throughout our history. When it came down to the necessity of defending ourselves or creating some decent social change in this country, it never was the politicians, and it certainly never was the corporations. It was always the average people that put it together. And I think it'll be this time. I hope so, or we're totally screwed.
Yep.
Okay, thank you, sir.
Thanks a lot.
All right. I mean, that's terrible. I mean, never mind. Forget about me. I'm going to let me take calls in this order. Here's Rob. Rob plays in the Motown Rage Band. Hey, Rob, thanks for joining us.
Hey, what's up? Longtime friend, Peter.
Yeah, you've been on Motor City Riffs, haven't you?
Yeah, we've been on air a couple of times. Actually, we just played at TNT this weekend.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, I've heard you, remember. In fact, Jay Hudson, who is the co-host of Motor City Riffs, is also my producer. And that's right. I remember saying, hey, who's that? He said, that's Motown Rage. So what's up, Rob?
Hey, I'm just calling in. I was listening to some of them things that you guys were talking about tonight. And one of the things that's really, really pissing me off and it eats at my heart is we got all these forces over in Iraq. And there's no need for us. One, you know how I feel about Bush anyway.
Yeah.
And about being over there. You know, we got people that can't even get medical coverage here in our own state of Michigan. Right now we have a freeze on a lot of medical coverages here just in Washtenaw County. And it's such a tragedy, Peter. And then you get people, I was watching a Jon Stewart show the other night because I'm a big fan of Jon Stewart.
Sure, great show.
And it is, isn't he? And he was bringing up the issue about Harriet Myers.
The nominee for Supreme Court. She's going down in flames, I think.
What her qualification was. And he pulled out the thing, says, Bush comes on, he goes, I've known Miss Harriet Myers for a decade. And Jon Stewart says, there's how you do it. If you want to get a job with Bush, Bush has got to know you for at least a decade.
Right.
But she's got more legal experience. We got more legal experience than she does.
Yeah.
And Peter, we're wasting all these thousands of dollars for these troops in Iraq, and Bush, one, he should be impeached for crimes against humanity and treason because he started a war which a war wasn't even supposed to be started. There's not even a war.
No, it violated both the congressional resolution and certainly the United Nations charter, which Bush, remember, Bush was trying to get the approval, and then when it was clear that he wasn't, they just went ahead anyways. And I've probably said this 100 times, I'll say it 101, is that the reason that he invaded so quickly, because the UN inspectors were there and they weren't finding anything, and there were no weapons of mass destruction. They knew it. Bush lied. People died. He should be tried for war crimes in The Hague. Forget about impeachment.
I totally agree with you. Just like that lady that was from Dexter, Michigan, the one that wanted to find out why her son died.
Yeah.
And she went up there, and she was sitting on Bush's lawn, and she wanted to get an answer. And Bush had her removed. And there was a gentleman who lives next door to George Bush who told her, says, I don't care about what George Bush has done. You can come to my yard. And he took that lady in. He his exact words were, I got more power than Bush.
Hmm.
And that's where the lady stayed. And, you know, she got so much support. You know, and I went to her son's funeral because I know the lady really well.
This is here in Michigan. You're not talking about Cindy Sheehan. You're talking about someone right here in Michigan?
Yeah, right here in Dexter, Michigan.
Really?
Yeah, she's the one that went out and got all that started because she just wanted, all she wanted was for Bush to come out and tell her why my son died.
Yeah.
Why is my son dead? And now you got people that, you know, don't even know if their family's going to come back. And we're doing something that, you know, and like you're talking about how the Iraqis feel, how we'd feel. I'd feel the same way if they were over here doing this to us.
Yeah, I think we'd have quite an attitude, wouldn't we?
Well, we would have a big attitude. You right. Really can't blame these people for being angry at us.
You well, know, well I know.
Kids, we bombed their city. We bombed their, you know, and then they, and Katrina's a good example. Oh, we can't get helicopters to fly these people out. But I bet you if he needed to do another shock and all, I bet he'd find a ton of helicopters.
Yeah.
Or if he wanted to go spray a marijuana crop somewhere, I bet he'd find a lot of helicopters. But now that the hurricane hit Texas, oh, you've seen the quick response they got from that.
They did that time. Rob, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Sir Peter. Rock on, bro.
You rock on, too, in the Motor City Rage Band. Just go online. You can find them. Here's what Aaron writes. He's listening in Pittsburgh, North Carolina. He said, how do we support our troops when the vast majority of them support this criminal administration? Well, I have no idea how many support it. Well, he says, I speak from experience. He says he's a Gulf War vet. My dad was a 25-year Air Force vet of Vietnam and the Gulf War, and part of the reason both of us parted ways with the military was because of how right-wing politically correct it was becoming. I mean, these guys are not stupid. They get to watch CNN, Surf the Net, etc. I can understand how the younger ones might not comprehend the big picture, but this extends all the way up to the ranks up to and including 20-year vets. I just can't stand watching these crowds of military folk enthusiastically cheering these criminals on anymore, and I'm starting to wonder if, quote, I don't support the troops. I also wonder if other people are feeling the same way. I'd love to hear your comments. Well, I've got a sign in my yard, like a lot of people, that says, support our troops, bring them home. That's the main way I'm going to support the rest. I don't even understand. How do you support our troops? By supporting everything this criminal administration does, as the Grim Reaper claims more and more lives, American and Iraqi, destroys more cities. I mean, do you ever read much of this? I mean, I suppose all this stuff is on television, isn't it? Here's John from Grosse Pointe. John, hi, it's Peter Werby, and you're on the air. Welcome.
Peter, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for calling.
Hey, great show. Long-time listener. Love your work. I have a small criticism from last week's show, but first I want to make a comment and then we'll go from there. Number one, the criminal Bush administration, the Bush crime family, I love that phrase.
Me too.
By the way, has never, in my opinion, and I've thought about this carefully, they have never told the truth about
anything
significant.
Anything. No. I mean, if it's Tuesday, they say it's Tuesday. You got to look at the calendar.
That's right. So you agree with me on that statement. They've never told the truth about anything significant.
Right.
Okay, here's my small criticism. Last week, you had a caller who brought up William Rodriguez. You remember that caller?
Oh, yeah. This was the guy, yeah.
World Trade Center janitor who's speaking out. He's a hero. He saved dozens of people that day. He was the only person that had a key to the stairwell, and he went back into the burning building and brought people out alive.
Right.
The guy's a hero, and he has been screaming at the top of his lungs, trying to get the mainstream media or anyone to listen to his full story.
His
full story is that there were explosions in the sub-basement before the planes hit.
Okay.
And he pulled out a guy that was on fire. It's documented. He was taken to the hospital. 10, 12, 15 people were with him and saw it. These explosions were pre-placed and are extremely significant in indicating a controlled demolition.
Right.
That brings up the issue of the Pentagon. That brings up the issue of the military stand-down, which Dick Cheney was in charge of, and a whole slew of questions. My statement is, given the fact that you and I and a lot of thinking Americans believe that the Bush administration didn't tell the truth about anything, why are so many people still willing to give them the benefit of the doubt that they told the truth about what happened on 9/11?
Well, I mean, ultimately, if you erase all of that, I have to be honest. I have my doubts about it, but let's leave that aside. Bush is responsible for 9/11. He,
sure.
Again, let's use the same word you did. He criminally did nothing when these reports were rushing in that there was an imminent attack planned by Osama bin Laden on the United States. He ignored explicit warnings in August where he didn't want to get his dumb ass back from Crawford, Texas. That in itself ought to have been enough to impeach him. And I've said all along, if Gore would have been president and allowed that kind of intelligence and military failure to occur, he would have been impeached by the Republicans.
Well, the distinction in the 9/11 truth community is between what they call lie hop and my hop. That's the shorthand. The shorthand means let it happen on purpose versus make it happen on purpose. And you're right in that it ultimately doesn't matter which side you come down on, whether it was, you know, criminal negligence or, you know, criminal involvement. The bottom line is I think that if more people understood the reality of the situation and the clear implications of some inside involvement, that they would, you know, be out in the streets rioting or, you know, ready for a revolution, which is probably what we need.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that truth needs to come out. And the key to bringing people back into awareness and waking them up is for all thinking Americans, again, to reevaluate what you really think you know about 9/11.
I don't have any problem with going there, but I would say I get a lot of stuff about, and I know this sort of denigrates it, about conspiracies that, and there are conspiracies that have not been exposed, but I always say there's enough to bring down this administration that occurs on the front page of the Detroit News or Free Press or New York Times or any other paper, that it doesn't even have to go this far. But, hey, I agree that people ought to look as closely and as intently as they can and take nothing for granted. All right, John, thanks for the criticism. I appreciate it. Here's another criticism to some extent. I was talking about I was blaming Clinton for passing NAFTA, which has been a disaster for North American workers. But Bob writes in to calltalkyes@yahoo.com. I got this after the show. George Herbert Walker Bush was the father of NAFTA. He said he put in a photograph, which I'll describe in a second, but Clinton passed it, though, trying to reach across the aisle. Little did he know what lies ahead. Bush's government, along with the conservative Canadian Prime Minister Brian Mulroney, spearheaded the negotiations of the NAFTA agreement, which Clinton later signed in 1993. I don't think that lets Clinton off the hook. I mean, he should have vetoed it. But the photograph, it was an initialing ceremony in October of 1992, so this was even before, 1992, the election was in 92, wasn't it? And the picture shows from left to right, President Salinas of Mexico, a conservative, Bush, a conservative, Mulroney, a conservative. Maybe it just shows the conservative side of Clinton, which passed this disaster. All right, not everybody agrees. I mean, wasn't Bush's popularity rating? What is it? Isn't it below 30% now? Certainly on the war. But Michael writes in, I rarely have these kind of exchanges with people, but in huge letters says, I love Bush, best president ever, only guy with balls. I also think that when they do find the weapons of mass destruction, you would not apologize in big caps. You would say, I bet the government hid, I would say, I bet the government hid them to find them, because that's how you are. Don't reply. I hate your show. I hate your talk, and I hate you. So I don't know why I replied, but I did. So he says he wants Bush in 2008. He says, you'll see one day, capture of Osama. I just saw this thing that said Osama's dead. The weapons of mass destruction will be found. I mean, see how insane these people are? Bush's government, his own inspectors, that they spent millions of dollars of our tax money saying, they've got to be here somewhere. We've got to find something. They've got to find a little trace. Maybe they don't have tons of all this poison crap, but they got to find maybe something. One, something, a suggestion. Nothing, nada, not a damn thing. And this is Bush's pals, right? But now, how's this? He said, he's our man. God, would I love to have a two-hour special face-to-face with George W. Bush. I mean, I would eat this guy alive. And so I wrote him back. I said, have you ever seen Bush Unscripted? I mean, how many people think that Bush could stand up to me or to you? I mean, without an advisor, without, you know, he was wired for all these. You ever seen that stuff, how he had a little transmitter in his ear? You can go to my website, peterwerby.com, W-E-R-B-E, peterwerby.com. Go to the Bush pages, which is over on the right-hand column, and you'll see the, what is it called, Wiregate scandal. But, I mean, 2 hours with George Bush. Maybe we can talk about biking and all the other stuff that he knows about. Nothing about the information. Anyway, so I keep writing him back. In fact, I write, Michael, even Bush's people said there were no WMDs. They never had them. He made them up. Everyone knows that now. And I wrote, come on, Bush is of subnormal intelligence. I would eat him alive. Did you ever hear him speak unscripted? A pathetic rich kid who was in way over his head. And I said, of course, I would always make a public correction when I'm wrong, and I've done so before on the air. And I thought, why would you think I wouldn't do it?
No, no apologies. George W. taught me that.
There you go. He says, I never give the guy a chance on anything. All I do is find the... Actually, he does say, thanks for the emails and responses. Sorry for the name calling. He says, your website never years ago was based on one thing, but since Bush hit office, it's 98%. Well, I don't know. The guy is pretty detrimental. What are we going to talk about? Let's see. All right. Before we go to spots, here's Tim in Dearborn. Tim, it's Peter Werby. Hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Peter?
Going great. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, I'm glad I got on. I wasn't working. I'm trying to drive this big truck.
Oh.
First
Careful.
Of all, I'm a conservative. I've listened for years to you, and I really respect your show, and I have a great time listening. And but I also disagree with the war and a lot of things. But the important thing I was calling in about is economic the way these rich people get away with just robbing us $20 million payoffs for these CEOs, and it's bothered me since since I was young. It's been a consistent thorn side. I hate it. I don't think anyone's worth more than a certain amount of money a year. And to see all these people and our jobs just going overseas and plants closing down and bankruptcies, I'm just I'm nervous about my children's future, and I just have a lot of anxiety over everything.
Well, I don't blame you, but how do you figure you're a conservative?
I'm not a conservative in, you can't put me in a box. I've always told people that, but I just don't agree with the liberals. I just think I have like more moral principles that I really adhere to. Financially, I believe in the statesman. I believe in helping the poor. I'm a working man.
Well, wait. I mean, isn't it actually a little presumptuous to say you have a higher moral standard than people you identify as?
Yeah, I know. That probably sounds self-centered. I don't mean it that way.
Well, I mean, the most liberal person I knew in terms of old New Deal liberals.
Uh-huh.
Now I'm going to really put you on the spot. It was my mother.
Oh, yeah.
Right, and she was the most moral person I ever met. Boy, I mean, the times that I did something that was wrong or mean or dishonest, you know, as a kid, man. But, I mean, we're not talking about politicians here. You know, people say, oh, Ted Kennedy, what about Chappaquiddick? I'm talking about the average person that is generous of spirit, the way it sounds like you are tolerant of other people, even if you don't agree with them. Like if you don't agree with abortion, it means you don't have one, or you try to convince people not to have one. If you, I'm trying to think whatever they always say. I mean, you got it. These Republicans are not pro-family. They don't have family values. They are involved in so many scummy scandals.
I agree.
Yeah. So you know what?
I agree. It's not that I'm a Republican or a Democrat. I think I'm more conservative than I am liberal, but that's why I said that. But I've been listening to you since I was 18 years old. I remember back when I was in my apartment, night call and stuff, and it's just so funny. I'm 38 now.
Wow. Wow.
So that's a long time.
I've been doing it that long. Let me, and I don't like.
Well, I was 20, maybe. Maybe I was 20. Right. You've had to have been doing it for that long because I know I was 20.
Listen, one thing about labels, and if someone told me to label myself, I would feel uncomfortable with almost anything. I mean, what if I said I was a liberal? Then people have this one image. If I said I was a leftist or a radical or an anarchist, or I mean, everybody would put a different in their own interpretation of what how these labels what these labels conjured up in their mind. And I don't think I would like any of them. On the other hand, I don't want to say like I'm an independent. People say that. I just say, hey, I've got a series of beliefs, and you can call them what the hell you want. Back in the day when you first started listening, I don't know if you ever remember, people would say to me, you sound like a communist. They'd say that to me. And I'd say, really? I'm much more radical than that.
Yeah, that's true.
Just,
I remember that.
Just to mess with their minds.
I think I remember you talking about going to Cuba and stuff, remember, and how you enjoyed the culture. And I did the same. I haven't been to Cuba, but I've been to South America and stuff, and the laid-back culture and but I think that might be why they said something like that. But
no, I didn't go to Cuba. I went to Cuba this February.
Didn't you go way back then?
No.
Oh, okay.
And I'm very critical of any government, as the Cuban government does, even if it's under assault, as it is continually from the U.S. government, that has the restrictions on political freedom. The way that it does.
Right.
It doesn't mean I want Bushco to go in there and overthrow it.
Exactly. Yeah I agree.
Okay. Go ahead.
Listen, the guy from Milan really took my teammate. What can we do? I mean, this has been going on. These people at the top are making billions, and I make $13 an hour, and I'm raising a family of four.
That's tough.
A family of five. What, he asked the question. I don't think you ever really got around to it. What can we really do?
Well,
I mean, you said something's got to bubble up from the surface, but we really got to unite and stop this robbery of the poor.
I know, Tim. I wasn't avoiding it, and if I had any secret plan, I'd be glad to give it up. I mean, we have been snookered in the sense that right now we don't have any forceful organizations to represent us. You can't depend on the Democratic Party. Unions are rolling over in front of these big corporations.
Right.
So right now, I mean, I hate to say this, but we almost have nothing other than our concern. Our sense of fairness, our anger. I mean, there are things like, and I don't have the full information on this, but there's a big conference going on at Wayne State University in November called Money for Our Cities, Not for War. And most people are thinking, well, I don't know, Wayne State University is downtown Detroit. I'm not a student. I'm not really into academic stuff. But this is the kind of thing that people ought to start. I mean, you have to be. You have to check things out and find out what's going on in my neighborhood. I mean, I know of dozens of stuff that occur all around the area, and you go to these things and there's 25 people there. Well,
yeah.
I mean, we've got to start coming
really
out.
A bummer. The masses are ignorant, Peter.
Well, but remember, there's an old famous line from this comic strip Pogo from the 50s said, "We have met the enemy, and it is us, or something. It is we, or something." In other words, everybody thinks that. Everybody thinks, well, nobody wants to do anything, and I'm the only one. Well, everybody wants to do something, but we haven't figured out what to do it through, how to make our voices strong. I mean, demonstrations are good, conferences like this are good, but ultimately these people have such a stranglehold on power that we're going to have to come up with something pretty serious, and I think that's in the future. I'm looking at my clock, and I got to take a break right now, so thanks for joining us.
It was great talking to you.
All right.
All right, take care.
All right, bye-bye now. Didn't sound like a conservative to me.
This is WRIF.com. Listening WRIF.com. This is WRIF.com.
The subliminal verses tour, the final volume, part of Budweiser True Music. Pick up Volume 3, the subliminal verses, featuring Before I Forget and Duality. Up close and in your face, Slipknot, this Monday. With special guest as I Lay Dying. And Unearthed.
Pentagon.
The Subliminal Versus Tour, the final volume, with Asylum Dying and Unearthed. This Monday at State Theater. Get general admission tickets now at Ticketmaster.com and all Ticketmaster locations.
Slipknot's first ever live album will be in stores November 1st.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Budweiser, your music, your beer.
Hey, Napoleon, where are you going?
I'm going to Waterloo to meet my enemies.
But you could get defeated if you go there.
Okay, it's over for me anyway. My wife, Josephine, she's divorcing me. She has this tough lawyer who wants to take everything. My palace at Versailles, all the fancy medals I win.
Oh?
Even my faithful horse, Pierre.
Well, there's no reason for a man to lose his home, his children, his money, or his self-respect.
Oh?
Now, Adam is here to protect you. Adam is the American Divorce Association for Men.
Ah.
They're a group of highly qualified divorce attorneys and counselors who will defend the rights of men in any divorce case.
Ooh.
Adam will answer your questions about divorce at no charge. Call the American Divorce Association for Men.
Hello, this is Napoleon the Great speaking.
Who is that, you nappy dally?
Josephine, what do you want from me now?
Adam is handling your divorce.
Yes, so?
Well, maybe after you conquer the rest of Europe, we could have lunch. I mean, it's nothing to lose your head over.
Call Adam at 248-356-ADAM. That's 248-356-ADAM.
Hey, where were you and Sarah all weekend? Don't tell me you're still out looking for a condo.
Oh, you guessed it. But everything's too expensive, and this is our first home.
Are you joking? Stop looking and start moving, because I have the greatest, coolest place. Your search is over.
Really? Tell me.
How about a condo on beautiful Walled Lake for under $200?
Yeah, right.
No, I mean it. EastBayWalledLake.com. They're going fast. There are only two dockside plans left at $155.9, or check out the Edgewater at only $165.9. Two bedrooms, two baths, spacious floor plans, full GE appliance package included, everything, even 100% financing.
You're full.
Oh, really? Get out there and fast. EastBayWalledLake.com or call 248-669-7500 and see for yourself. It's their fall special promotion.
No way. I can't believe it. How is this possible? I can't imagine being able to live on Walled Lake.
Well, now you can, but you better get out there. Remember, there are only a few left. EastBayWalledLake.com. What do I have to do? Drive you there myself? 248-669-7500.
Okay. EastBayWalledLake.com.
There you go, buddy. 248-669-7500. Affordable living on Walled Lake at EastBayWalledLake.com. Get there before they're all gone.
Real players come to MGM Grand to play. Are you ready to get lucky? Lucky Table Tuesdays has been extended due to enormous success. Now get lucky until November 22nd. Just play your favorite table games every Tuesday from noon to midnight. And if your table is randomly selected, everyone playing on it will win guaranteed cash, up to $250. With more cash and more winners every Tuesday, getting lucky is easier than you think. Come get your game on during Lucky Table Tuesdays, only at MGM Grand. Lucky Table Tuesdays is back, and so is your chance to score. Instant bonus cash with more winners than ever before. See Players Club for details. MGM Grand Detroit Casino.
Say thank you to you, all of our clients out there. It's our 20-year anniversary, and we're excited. And right now, for folks that have credit card debt, you need to be careful. Credit card minimum payments are going to be doubling soon. So you want to consolidate that debt, and the mortgage experts can help you right now. You call today, a mortgage expert can help you consolidate that credit card debt, reduce your payments now.
It's time to live.
Company Equal Housing Lender.
Hello, my name is Dr. Kambadi with the Lake Laser Eye Center, where I treat you personally from the minute you walk through the door to the moment you leave with excellent vision. Recently, we asked WRIF to help get our message out to the public. We've had great success using WRIF, and this is why. Steve, my account manager, took the time to visit my facility and see firsthand what makes us different from the competition. He then made the proper marketing recommendation for my business. I'm glad they were able to see that I'm a hands-on doctor that treats everyone myself from beginning to end. They properly deliver that message. I think the staff here is great, and now I feel like a true part of the Rift family.
Hi, I'm Steve DeBruzen from Rift Sales. Rift doesn't just rock. Rift works for your business. Call me today at 248-591-6826.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. We're heading into our last segment. And then at 1 o'clock Eastern time, I say that, Eastern time, because people listening, not just in our radio area here, but all across the world. Sorry, I'm thinking of something. What am I thinking about? I'm thinking that we're going to have Norm Stamper, the former police chief of the city of Seattle, on at 1 a.m. An interview I did with him, I think you'll find pretty surprising, about police work, his own story, and his call for the legalization of drugs, the end to the drug war that has cost this nation $1 trillion and done nothing except bring more misery than drugs ever could have, and nowhere near. Clayton says he's a listener since 1984. Have I been doing this long? Maybe. He says, Pete, I was watching C-SPAN coverage of a press conference made up of the leaders of three conservative groups that included the Heritage Foundation, and they all expressed a great concern over our national deficit. They called it irresponsible. Talk about the wheels coming off of the Bush administration. As Clayton says, Bush is doing a good job of making a lot of people nervous, including some of his core backers. And Bruce Birch wrote in, who is the webmaster for All Things Reconsidered, and he was kind enough to interview me. It aired tonight. And the URL for ATR, All Things Reconsidered, is thetruththis.us/ATR. thetruththis.us/ATR. I'll put a link on my website. And it's archived at whiterosesociety.org. Also, this program is archived there as well. And you can also, we also podcast. So a lot of ways to get this show, no matter where you are in the world. Okay, here's Jennifer in Dundee, Michigan. Jennifer, hi, it's Peter Werby. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
I'm doing great.
I'm ashamed to say this is the first time I've listened to you tonight, but I have so many things that I want to talk about. First of all, I think it's ridiculous that we have anyone in Iraq whatsoever. I believe that we targeted the wrong people for 9/11. First of all, had nothing to do with Iraq. Being a single mother of three, I've been divorced for 4 years, and I'm really struggling. Dad's great. Has a good income, but where I'm at right now, I've recently lost my job. I have no insurance myself.
Boy.
And where I'm at is, let's save up some food in the basement and see where we can go from there, you know?
See, nobody should, in this country, should have be subjected to that. I mean, if this was like Denmark or some country like that and that occurred, there'd be a social safety net so large that it would take care of you and your children until the time came where you could get back to doing what you wanted to do, which
right.
would, yeah. But here, and then I don't know if you heard me earlier read this letter from this guy, nobody's hungry.
Right. Well, it's sad because before I had kids, you know, I had a competent job. I'm not an idiot. And now after being a stay-at-home mom for 8 years, I'm kind of in a predicament where I could have a fairly decent job. But as you said before, if you're looking for a decent wage, we have new companies rising up in this area. But they are at a point where they can actually take college graduates for these positions because they need a job just as bad as the rest of us do.
Sure.
So, you know, for any job, janitorial, anything. So it's
Yeah, this is the odd thing. I rarely I don't do things I ever feel guilty about. But sometimes when I hear your stories and other people, I mean, I actually have this somewhat wave of guilt at my situation. And I don't make a fortune. I mean, people think, oh, you're in radio. You must be a millionaire. Well, I am nowhere near that. I live in an upper working class, lower middle class suburb, and I live pretty modestly, and I always have.
Yeah.
And I would say, my income is above average, but we don't have any kids, and so that makes it a lot easier. And for a single mother and trying to raise three kids, and
I just would like to keep them with me, you know.
Sure.
And losing a bartending job, which I think, well, maybe I should go back to bartending, and I'd rather not. I'm to the point where all of my kids are in school all day, and I'd rather have a daytime job. And it's very difficult to make that transition.
And I know guys like me are supposed to have great suggestions, and I have zero. I have zero.
Please help me. No.
Well, hey, I don't know what you said when you first got on the line, Jennifer, something like you're sorry or something like that, but I was mentioning these people have been listening for 21 years. It must have been first time for them, too. I don't know if I'll be doing this in 21 years. Who knows?
I don't know.
Yeah. Well, look, best of luck to you. Please keep listening and call in from time to time. Let us know how things are going.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Good night.
All right. Good night to you as well. Boy, those stories, they make me, just as I said, this combination of guilty, angry, and so sad for people, too. Let's see. Here is Ed in Holland, Ohio. Hi, Ed. Welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Pete. How you doing?
Doing great. Are you listening to the WRF signal or online?
I'm listening to the signal.
Okay, great.
Signal.
Glad we're getting... you're near Toledo or something?
Yeah, I'm just west of Toledo, near Holland, not too far from Toledo Express Airport.
Okay, great. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah, I can pick up you, and I have actually a radio station about a mile from here, a Christian radio station, and I can pick up WDET from here, too.
Okay.
And, hey, have you ever thought about having Alex Jones as a guest? Have you ever heard of Alex Jones?
I think so, but I can't remember who it is.
He's got the website Prison Planet. And
all
that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that would be a pretty cool show.
What is that? Just PrisonPlanet.com? Is that his?
Yeah, PrisonPlanet.com and Infowars.com.
Yeah.
And at first I thought he was kind of a charlatan trying to make a lot of money off his videotapes. But the more I listen to him, he's kind of scary, some of the stuff he has to say about these people that are so-called leaders, with Chimpy Bush and Rumsfeld and Patriot Act, stuff like that.
Sure.
But I think it would be pretty cool if you see about having him on as a guest or something, I think.
Well, I will consider that.
Yeah, but, I don't, well, for one thing, I survived the riot okay from last week. We had trouble.
Yeah, you did down there.
Made the news all over the world.
And there hadn't been any big riots in the U.S. In a long time, and then think, wow, Toledo.
Yeah, well, these Nazis showed up from out of town and crawled out from underneath their rocks, and cops told them, we can't guarantee your safety, so they hightailed it back to where they come from, and it just turned into ground zero.
Yeah, I don't want to give anybody like that any publicity, so I won't mention any names, but I've been reading, and it's been all over the Internet, there are these two, they'd be two if they were twins, these twin 13-year-old girls, these beautiful little girls that sing these racist Nazi songs. They show them with they're wearing T-shirts and they have like pictures of Hitler on it. How sick are these parents?
I don't know. If they were my kids, they'd be listening to bluegrass and Allman Brothers, but because I am a bluegrass musician, so
really,
yeah.
All right, good for you, Ed.
I really like the show. I've been listening to it for a while, and
I appreciate it.
And all that. So,
I'll consider your suggestion. So, thank you very much.
Hey, have a good evening.
You too, sir. Thank you for joining us. And here is Eric from Pontiac. Eric, hi, it's Peter Werby. You're on the air. Hey, Eric.
Hello.
Hello. Turn your radio off. Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Well, I had two things, actually.
Go ahead.
Earlier you asked why we were over in Iraq.
Right.
And the simple and the only logical answer that anybody I've ever heard has come up with is that we went over there for oil. The big question there is, why is the price still going up?
Well, because they can't pump it. There was just another sabotage of the main pipeline. I mean, they see it in long-range strategy. I mean, think about it, you know, Eric, how this worked out. I mean, these prices went way up, and you know, Exxon and all these other buddies of Bush and Cheney have been making a fortune off of us over the last several months, right? I mean, they want to have what they want is strategic control. Well, I'll have to use the same word twice. Strategic control of the strategic oil reserves in that area. So they'll also have all these forward bases for controlling events there. Except these guys are F-ups. Everything they've ever done has kind of crashed and burned. I mean, Bush in business, Bush trading Sammy Sosa, Cheney buying Drexler Industries that have all these lawsuits against them. But when you're rich and powerful, you can make mistake after mistake. If you're middle class, you're poor, one little mistake, you know, you're out of there. But you're right. It's a war for oil. Blood for oil. And then almost 2,000 Americans dead, 15,000 severely wounded, 50,000 total having medical problems for oil. This is this is monstrous. Absolutely monstrous. Hey, you know, I'm almost out of time, so give me your second point.
Well, the second point is a little more involved. I mean, if you look back through history, I mean, American history alone, you've got the Civil War, you've got the where we separated from England.
Yeah.
You've got World War One, you've got World War Two, and it goes back further than America. I mean, you've got the Trojan War, all through history, one thing has always held true.
What's that?
And that's that if you want great change for a great purpose, it's only ever going to be achieved through armed conflict. And I hate to say that because that makes me sound like a revolutionary, but...
Well, let me just say, because I'm totally out of time, I've got about 20 seconds, and I'm sorry to take the last word, but it's always revolution at last resort. I mean, it's always the other side that initiates it. I mean, it was the British. I mean, people in the United States say, hey, we're declaring our independence, goodbye. And then it was the king. Well, we don't want it to come to that, and we've got a lot more latitude. So let's think about all these nonviolent legal stuff that we can do before we go on that path. But you have some unfortunate truth on your side. All right. Thank you very much, Eric. Thanks for joining us, and stay tuned for our interviews.
And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsor, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, 1 Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220. And now, a word from the Riff Legal Eagles. Unless otherwise stated, all entrants for WRIF contests must be at least 18 years of age and a legal resident of the United States. A household is eligible to win one contest per 30 days every 6 months for prizes valued at $600 or higher. Greater Media Detroit and its affiliates, promotional sponsor, advertising and promotional agencies, and other radio and television stations in the Detroit ADI are not eligible to participate. One entry per person. No purchase or other consideration is necessary to participate in a contest. Void where prohibited. Prizes are non-transferable or redeemable for cash. 101 WRIF reserves the right to substitute any prize for one of equal or greater value. By participating in the contest, contestants consent to the
broadcast and or publication of their name, voice, face, and or likeness without compensation. Participants listening online at www.wrif.com may receive audio that is delayed by as much as 60 seconds later than the over-the-air transmission, which could potentially affect chances of winning. General contest rules are available online at www.wrif.com or during regular business hours at the WRIF Studios, One Radio Plaza, Detroit, Michigan, 48220.
Tired of expensive phone bills? Standard phone service can cost a minimum of $30, and for the unlimited packages, it's anywhere from $40 to $70. After adding all the taxes and fees, the question is it really worth it? I'd like to introduce you to Corecom's new product, Voice over Internet Protocol, or simply VoIP. This innovation allows you to talk to anyone around the world by using your broadband internet connection. With its advanced features, VoIP is revolutionizing telephone service as we know it today. Even more exciting is that this can all be done at a fraction of the price of traditional phone service. Why would you pay more when you can pay less? If you've got high-speed internet access, Corecom can offer you a package for as low as $15.99 per month. When was the last time your phone company offered you any package options that low? As an added bonus, if you call within the next 10 minutes, Corecom will throw in 1 month free. All you have to do is call 1-866-680-CORE. That's 1-866-680-CORE. Call now and mention promotion code WRIF, or if you register online, type in promotion code WRIF to get your free month. Corecom, revolutionizing phone service one call at a time.
Road in Auburn Hills, across from 12 Oaks and Novi, in Utica at M59 and the Van Dyke Expressway, and our newest store across from Oakland Mall in Troy.
It's late. Are you having trouble sleeping? Worrying about being laid off? Or worse, that you don't have a plan for tomorrow? Let's face it, Michigan residents need new skills to get out of this unemployment rut. Get on the fast track where opportunities are soaring. The Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology at Willow Run Airport in Belleville, Michigan is getting calls from across the country to fill positions, and they need your help. Get a new career off the ground as a skilled technician, earning respect and securing your future. Pick up your phone now and call 1-800-447-1310. It's actual hands-on training with top instructors in the field. Their phones are ringing off the hook to fill positions, and that's no joke. Call 1-800-447-1310. You can be in high demand with these technical skills. In 2005 alone, the Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology posted more than 20 career openings for each graduate. That's 20 to 1. Take your earning potential to new heights in just 4 to 20 months at the Michigan Institute of Aviation and Technology. Don't wait. Call 1-800-447-1310 today, or go to miat.edu. Financial aid available to those who qualify.
Want to go for a ride? After months of construction, the party is heating up, announcing the grand reopening of the completely renovated Crazy Horse. State-of-the-art sound, staging, and lighting, newly expanded kitchen, and the most beautiful entertainers anywhere. And this is just the beginning of what's waiting for you at the all-new Crazy Horse. Catch all your favorite sporting action on the Crazy Horse's 8 plasma screens and enjoy an extensive menu including steaks, prime rib, lamb chops, and the best ribs in town. Plus, the Crazy Horse offers complimentary transportation to all the games. The Crazy Horse is the headquarters for your bachelor, bachelorette, and Christmas parties. They'll even pick you up in their chauffeur-driven party bus. Don't miss the craziest Halloween party Thursday, October 27th at the Crazy Horse. Crazy Horse, where there's never a cover charge for card-carrying union members. Conveniently located 1 minute off I-94 on Michigan Avenue. Call 313-581-7400. The Crazy Horse, the ride of your life every night of the week.
Are you a homeowner?
Yes.
Do you want to save money?
Yes.
Are you paying more than 4% on your loan?
Yes.
If you said yes to these questions, then say yes to a new lower rate from American Equity Mortgage, and we'll say yes to you. Call toll-free 888-229-7699.
My credit's great. Should I be calling American Equity Mortgage?
Yes. Everyone wants a better deal, and American Equity Mortgage can save you hundreds of dollars every month.
Can I get cash fast?
Yes. At American Equity Mortgage, you can get approval in hours and close as fast as 1 week.
I heard rates are going up. Can I still save money?
Yes, if you're paying more than 4%. Call us today at 888-229-7699. The sooner you call, the sooner you can get a new lower rate from American Equity Mortgage.
American Equity Mortgage. The future belongs to you.
American Equity Mortgage. 888-229-7699. Or apply online at AmericanEquity.com.
We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining me. A pleasure to be with you. And I'd like to look at a few issues that that are present in law enforcement. Our whole idea about crime, punishment, who are the criminals in this society, who should be criminalized, what sort of behavior. Joining me is the former police chief of Seattle, Norm Stamper. Norm Stamper was a policeman for 34 years, the last six of which was spent as the chief of Seattle's police department. His brand new book out, published by Nation Books. It's called Breaking Rank, a Top Cop's Exposé of the Dark Side of American Policing. And joining me from Washington State, Norm Stamper. Norm, welcome to the Peter Werbe Show. Pleasure to have you with me.
Thanks. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. Now, maybe just explain as a way of the theme of your book what this all means, Breaking Rank and the Dark Side of American Policing.
Well, with the exception of my first year, my rookie year as a police officer, which I do describe in some detail in the book, I have considered myself an agent of change in American law enforcement, starting really with myself, and then moving on to the larger institution of American policing. And I'm convinced, Peter, that there is a need for radical reform of American law enforcement. So the book is it's part polemic and part memoir, to use my publisher's description.
Okay, and what's the dark side that you say you're going to expose?
The dark side, for an awful lot of people, is unfortunately well illuminated, but within policing it's often dark, and for those who are sort of blind supporters of law enforcement, it's shadowy as well. That would describe, I think, the extent to which racism, sexism, homophobia, and other brands of bigotry are alive and well in American law enforcement.
And how does it play itself out? I was going to say also that, I think there ought to be a better word, but classism, obviously in the big cities, particularly in the ones, a lot of them in the East here, but on the West Coast as well, you have a large bulk of poor people where a good percentage of the crimes come from. So that you have essentially either upper working class or sometimes even middle class police officers dealing with very, very oftentimes very, very poor people that they're policing,
and often unsympathetically, needless to say, as well as unwisely. I think classism is a reality in the larger society to a very large extent, and that's certainly also true of really all of its public institutions, including what I consider to be the most sensitive of those public institutions, policing.
Mm-hmm. Norm Stamper, you didn't mention brutality. This comes up from time to time, and maybe in terms of your book, Breaking Rank, we can even talk about the situation in Seattle a few years back. But normally Seattle is thought of as a much nicer, kinder place, say, than certainly the scandals in L.A., New Orleans, including what just happened. Do you think that brutality is endemic? Is it a systemic problem across the United States?
You know, I do believe that's so. In the two departments that I know most intimately, excuse me, namely the San Diego and Seattle police departments, starting a number of years ago, a real emphasis was placed on individual accountability and making sure that police officers understood that they were entitled to use only that amount of force necessary to effect an arrest or to perform their lawful duties. And I'm pleased to say that those are at least two agencies where that accountability for that kind of behavior was manifested in education and training, the selection process as well, but also in discipline. I made it clear to my cops in Seattle that no matter how provoked you may feel, to use excessive force is absolutely unacceptable, and it will get you fired.
Well, you tell me. Now, these aren't statistics. This is coming off the top of my head. But as I remember, charges of brutality usually are leveled against a small percentage of any particular police force, rather. But what is also interesting, let me tell you sort of anecdotally. Friends I have, people I know, relatives I know that are in the Detroit police, as far as I know and as far as I've told them, none of them have ever had a charge of brutality or misconduct or anything charged against them. On the other hand, they don't have many arrests. And you find out that there's a coincidence, and correct me if I'm wrong, that these men that often get accused of brutality also have high number of commendations and arrests.
You know, that is certainly true of many agencies. In fact, I would dare say most big city police departments in the country, that there is a pattern of practices that really cries out for examination and for the exercise of very strong, decisive leadership to either get the attention of these individuals or get them the hell out of the organization, because they're poison. And it's really tragic when police leaders don't take care of that end of the business, and when police unions so quickly and sometimes all too often effectively come to the defense of the behavior of officers who are engaged in patterns of brutality. And then there's the elected officials. I think there are many elected officials who are just wary of, if not frightened of, police unions, and they don't exercise the kind of leadership that we elect them to exercise.
Norm Stamper is my guest on the Peter Werbe Show. He's the former chief of the Seattle Police. He has a brand new book out called Breaking Rank, A Top Cop's Exposé of the Dark Side of American Policing. Just one more thing I've always been curious about, and I want to get more to your story, and that is that we always hear about the blue what's it called, the
Oh, it's been called a number of things. If I can anticipate what you're asking, the blue wall of silence.
The blue wall of silence, all right.
Sure.
On the other hand, so you think, why would these basically decent people not give the goods up on somebody that's being brutal? And one aspect of it, I mean, there is certainly solidarity within paramilitary organization, and you have to depend on the other people. But someone told me once, an officer, that these are the guys that are going to wade into like a big fight or tackle somebody that's not going to submit to arrest easily. Or when there's an armed man in a building, they're the ones that are going to go in. So in a sense, the brutal cops are sort of the muscle of big city policing.
Well, they certainly are, and one of the things that I think is poorly understood and often misunderstood by the public is that policing is a culture unto itself, and there are elements of that culture that make the kind of behavior you're describing understandable, if not predictable. And what that begins to suggest for me is the need to sort of rearrange the way the molecules are organized and go about radical restructuring of America's police forces, which will produce the kind of cultural change that we need.
I want to talk about that. Let's talk a little just about you. You talked about individual change. I mean, yourself, Norm Stamper, the author of Breaking Rank. What kind of changes did you go through? This sort of reform-minded idea, I mean, I don't hear too much of that. So you must have gone through quite a change yourself. Could you, I mean, we have some time here. You just, from a rookie to chief of police, what occurred? I mean, I know people should read the book. They get a better idea, but sort of a summary.
Well, the summary for me goes something like this. When I became a cop, it was after 21 years of childhood and adolescence in which I had what I consider to be now vaguely idealistic notions about the way the world ought to operate. I had some personal experience with the police that wasn't pleasant, but it wasn't outrageous either. But I had also seen on television in the 60s, before I became a cop, Birmingham Bull O'Connor sicking his minions on peacefully demonstrating civil rights protesters, and I was aghast. I mean, I felt physically ill watching those police dogs chomping down on the legs of men and women and children, and fire hoses trained on the demonstrators and the like. So when I became a cop, which was for me more or less accidental, putting it briefly, I needed a new job. I was recently married, and my wife and I were living in the National City Veterinary Hospital, where I was a veterinary assistant. And I got married at 20; she was 18. I had already been there for about 3 years, and it was not a pleasant arrangement living in an apartment on the grounds. So at any rate, I'm looking for a new job, and I accompany a friend to take the police test, thinking, well, you know, it's if it's outdoor work, it eventually will pay more than what I was getting there. And long story short, I passed the test and I become a cop. Within the briefest period of time, it's almost breathtaking to me looking back on it, how radically I changed within weeks or months. I began saying things I'd never said before in my life. I began doing things I'd never done before in my life. And by the time I completed my rookie year, I was a thug in uniform. I enjoyed the power that I had. I enjoyed even more abusing that power. And it manifested pretty much across the board in terms of excessive force. I would bait people into taking a swing at me so that I could choke them out using what was called then as the standard police sleeper hold. If I didn't tell awful racist jokes, I laughed at them uproariously. I was definitely involved in what I would consider to be not gay bashing, but gay trashing. And I just, I was just having a grand old time of it, being, an obnoxious, caustic, cynical, and fun-loving abuser of my fellow citizens.
Now, were you the small percentage, or was this behavior that seemed across the board in San Diego police?
Well, my colleagues of that era would refute this, or attempt to refute it, but they would be wrong. It was common, what I'm describing now. The racism, the sexism, the homophobia, the brutality, the cynicism, the distance really between cops and the citizens that police officers are hired to serve. So I would describe it as patterned and definitely institutionalized. And there's been progress. My comeuppance, incidentally, Peter, came at the hands of a principled prosecutor who braced me in the hall of the San Diego County Courthouse. I had brought to him, at about 14 months on the job, I brought to him an arrest of a 19-year-old. I call him a kid in the book. I was only 3 years his senior, but I arrested this 19-year-old. He happened to be white. He could just as easily have been black, for being drunk in a public place and unable to care for himself or the safety of others, which satisfied the requirements of 647F of the California Penal Code, namely drunk in a public place. And the only problem was he wasn't drunk, but he had an attitude. And nonetheless, I knew exactly how to handle this when I got the subpoena. I had seen it done. So I stride into the courthouse, and I sidle up to the prosecutor and give him a wink and a nudge, and I tell him, you probably want to dismiss this case. And he said, why? I said, well, it's kind of skinny. And he said, what do you mean by that? I said, well, it's more or less a kind of an attitude arrest. And his response to that was to look me in the eye and ask me if the Constitution of the United States meant anything to me. And I was outraged for about 7 seconds. And then I was deeply embarrassed. And by the time he did dismiss the case, but by the time I slithered down the steps of the courthouse out into the bright sunshine, I was literally saturated in shame. I could hardly walk. I just felt like I'd been busted. Everything that I thought I believed in, I had seemingly abandoned when I became a cop. I was enjoying the life, and here this guy has the nerve to slap me upside the head and let me know that my behavior was not only unappreciated by him, it was unlawful. And it got my attention. And there were a couple of other factors that were brewing at the time, but that was the triggering event. And from that point on, I've made it my business to at least try to behave myself and to see what we could do to make the institution more responsive and responsible as well.
Well, Norm Sandberg, I didn't even think of the conversation going in this direction, but if we skip way up to 1999, people are saying Seattle Police Chief Norm Stamper is the Bull Connor of the anti-WTO demonstrations.
How do I plead?
Yeah. I don't know. I wasn't going to say that. What's your impression? Or how do you plead? Whatever, however you want to...
The chapter in my book, it's 28, on the WTO, is called Snookered in Seattle. And the long and the short of it is, I thought as police chief in that city that we were ready for the WTO ministerial conference, for the demonstrators, for the media, for this very, very large event in a very small city, 530,000 people. And we had spent 10,000 hours in planning and preparation, all of it oriented toward ensuring that protesters of globalization would have an opportunity to state their minds and to engage the community. If they couldn't get a hold of the ministers of the WTO, at least the media and the community in a dialogue about the evils of globalization. So, and Seattle had developed, I think you alluded to this earlier, had developed a reputation of being very accommodating of demonstrations, typically coming from the left, but also from the right, and attempting to work with demonstration leaders to provide a forum for the expression of their particular concerns. In this case, we were simply too small a city and too small a county and too small a state to be able to handle the 50,000 demonstrators and the small portion of that larger crowd that was engaged in clearly violent acts. And I will confide to you and to your listeners that it took me 5 years of retirement to come to the conclusion that I was really wrong about one major aspect of the WTO, the police response to WTO.
Mm-hmm.
I had said in my book, and this is why I pray for a second edition so that I can come clean on that issue, that we had no choice but to gas nonviolent demonstrators who had linked arms and sat down in an intersection, 6th and Union, for anybody that knows that city, next to the Sheraton Hotel and a block away from the convention center where the conference was underway. My rationale for supporting a decision by my field commanders to declare an unlawful assembly and issue warning after warning after warning and then finally use gas, the euphemism being chemical agents, was that we had five or six other demonstrations and large contingents of protesters converging on the area at the same time, and we were completely overwhelmed. But it was a huge mistake. Now the cop in me at the time, and the cop in me that is a very important piece of who I am, for 5 years has held on to this belief that we had to clear that intersection because it was a critical strategic location surrounded by high-rise office buildings, by thousands upon thousands of demonstrators, and the convention center conference delegates. So my rationale in supporting the decision, I didn't actually make the decision, but in supporting it was if we had somebody on the 27th floor of the Sheraton Hotel having a heart attack or somebody on the 15th floor of another one of those office buildings in labor, that we'd have to be able to get aid cars through there, and we couldn't. There was no way that could be done, and I kept saying to myself, well, if the demonstrators will just give us a corridor through which we could move from point A to point B, that would be acceptable. But they weren't in the mood to do that, and it wasn't in the cards. And long and the short of it is we gassed them, and I supported that decision up until very recently. On the book tour, I've met demonstrators, protesters who were in Seattle, who gave me no new information, but just listening to them caused a shift in my thinking. And I now believe that the risk that medical emergency that I just described hypothetically would become real was low, and that the cost of doing what we did was altogether too high.
Well, I thank you for that, Norm Stamper. And you'll have to remind me whether your retirement was voluntary or was it, did you wind up to be sort of the bad guy in it all?
I took and I continue to take full responsibility. If you're looking for the one bad guy, that would be Norm Stamper.
Well, I don't know that. I'll leave that to you and to your book, Breaking Rank, a Top Cop's Exposé of the Dark Side of American Policing. It's published by Nation Books. Now, our time, we could probably, now that I get into this conversation, we probably could do 2 hours with this, but we only have about 3 or 4 minutes left. And what brought you to my attention were the good people at the Drug Policy Alliance. You can go to drugpolicy.org. And your op-ed piece in the Los Angeles Times on October 16th, which says, former police chief wants to end a losing war by legalizing pot, coke, meth, and other drugs. And you say not decriminalization, but the legalization of all drugs, including heroin, cocaine, meth, psychotropics, mushrooms, and LSD. That probably sets the hair up on some people's back. Not mine, but tell us. The war on drugs, is it lost?
I think it was lost the moment it was declared during the Nixon administration era. Drug use, to my way of thinking, ought to be a civil right of all adult Americans. Drug abuse needs to be seen for what it is, namely a tragedy and a medical problem for the individual and a public health problem for society. And I might mention, Peter, I think your listeners would be also interested. I'm a huge fan of DPA, Drug Policy Alliance. Wonderful people. And another fine organization is LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. And their website is www.leap.cc. And all across the globe, we're finding police officers and judges and attorneys and DAs joining the ranks of LEAP, Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. Nixon got it wrong. Previous administrations had as well, but the war on drugs was really declared during his administration, and we've now seen a succession of 7 presidents waging this unwinnable war because the whole issue has been framed incorrectly and so much suffering has resulted from it.
Now, people have used the phrase prison industrial complex, which has cost the American people somewhere around $1 trillion. I know the Drug Policy Alliance has a whole campaign that they're trying to at least get the Congress to get rid of some of the worst programs that we're financing with our public dollars. And I mean, we keep talking about where are we going to get the money for this? Where are we going to get the money from that? I mean, that's an excellent question. And I'm sure, as a former police officer, that you realize that so much of the locus of police corruption has been around the drug trafficking, hasn't it?
Almost all of it. Almost all of it across the country. And there is no city, certainly of any size, that has been spared the agony of and the specter of police officers hired to uphold the law breaking the law. And there, virtually every major city, major corruption scandal of the last 2 or 3 decades has been traceable to drugs.
Now, Norm Stamper, I don't know if you can do this in 60 seconds, but you talked about the necessity of change within the police culture and hence the police administrations. Any kind of shorthands you could give us in the time remaining?
Demilitarize it, de-bureaucratize it, create a new organizational arrangement that puts cops in closer and friendlier contact with the communities they serve. Would be a start. Treat cops with dignity and respect. And I'm speaking now to their bosses, who employ sometimes draconian disciplinary actions against minor infractions and neglecting the major infractions out there in the community.
We actually have just a few seconds left. Demilitarize. I mean, what are you saying? An English style take away their guns kind of thing?
No. Unfortunately, I would love to be able to take away everyone's guns in this society. That will get you some mail. But I do believe that it's necessary for the police to be armed since so many of our citizens are armed. I also believe that it's important to maintain control over police practices and to exercise discipline appropriately to ensure that in a demilitarized operation that would flatten the bureaucracy and strengthen decentralized policing, that cops at all levels still need to be held accountable.
Well, we're out of time. Norm Stamper, thanks for joining us. The book is Breaking Rank, a top cop's expose of the dark side of American policing. It's available from Nation Books. I'll have a link on my website. Thank you, Norm Stamper.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Hi, this is Colleen McDonald, president of Holiday Automotive Group. You know us as Holiday Chevrolet in Farmington Hills, Livonia Chrysler Jeep in Livonia, and Century Dodge in Taylor. We know it's never fun to have to bring your car in for service, and worse yet, if you've been in an accident. But rest assured, our service staff is here and ready to help you. To make an appointment, go online at weloveholiday.com. It's that easy.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
We also have special discounts if you need body work on your vehicle and accept all insurance companies. Call us at 866-867-0909 for more information. We're the Holiday Automotive Group. We've got you covered from Downriver to Oakland County.
Get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV, get a car, get a truck, get an SUV.
Get general admission tickets now at Ticketmaster.com and all Ticketmaster locations.
Slipknot's first ever live album will be in stores November 1st.
Brought to you by Budweiser. Budweiser, your music, your beer.
Hey, where were you and Sarah all weekend? Don't tell me you're still out looking for a condo.
Oh, you guessed it. But everything's too expensive, and this is our first home.
Are you joking? Stop looking and start moving, because I have the greatest, coolest place. Your search is over.
Really? Tell me.
How about a condo in beautiful Walled Lake for under $200?
Yeah, right.
No, I mean it. EastBayWalledLake.com. They're going fast. There are only two dockside plans left at $155.9. Or check out the Edgewater at only $165.9. Two bedrooms, two baths, spacious floor plans, full GE appliance package included. Everything, even 100% financing.
You're full of
it. Oh, really? Get out there and fast. EastBayWalledLake.com or call 248-669-7500 and see for yourself. It's their fall special promotion.
No way. I can't believe it. How is this possible? I can't imagine being able to live on Walled Lake.
Well, now you can, but you better get out there. Remember, there are only a few left. EastBayWalledLake.com. What do I have to do? Drive you there myself? 248-669-7500.
Okay. EastBayWalledLake.com.
There you go, buddy. 248-669-7500. Affordable living on Walled Lake at EastBayWalledLake.com. Get there before they're all gone.
Every successful career has a beginning. Have you started yours yet? Turbocharge your opportunities by calling ITT Technical Institutes at 1-800-903-1919. Nationwide, thousands have launched technical careers after graduating from an ITT Tech. If you have an interest in electronics, information technology, or drafting and design, they teach skills that many employers look for. Most programs provide a hands-on education and can help you build your knowledge base and technical skills. Classes meet just a few times a week to help you balance school and your job. Financial aid is available for those who qualify, and career assistance is available once you graduate. Develop technical skills at an ITT Tech and discover a whole new world of opportunity. Call now for a brochure at 1-800-903-1919. That's ITT Tech, 1-800-903-1919. 1-800-903-1919.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much for joining us, and happy holidays to all of you. One of the things that people always say, you know, people get really kind of folksy, philosophical at times like this, say, well, at least we have our health, or sometimes some of us don't, and people talk about how health is the most important thing that we can possibly have. How true it is. I mean, this aphorism, actually is true. If without good health, everything else just doesn't work very well. And that's almost taken to some extent by at least lots of Americans as a right. It's not a privilege, something that we ought to have, access to health care and access to good health care. Well, it's not even true in this country, to be sure, and it gets worse once we leave our borders for what we sometimes call the third world countries. A book has come my way, I think filled with very, very important essays. It's called Sickness and Wealth, The Corporate Assault on Global Health, and it's edited by Meredith Fort, Marianne Mercer, and Oscar Gish. And joining me is Meredith Fort. She's a public health activist and public health practitioner, and she's participated in grassroots health efforts in Guatemala since 1997. She currently works with the Instancia. Give me a chance before I introduce our guest. Instancia Nacional de Salud, to help implement the alternative primary health care proposal in rural Guatemala. Meredith Fort, welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you very much for having me.
What do I get for Spanish? A C, I'll bet, huh?
Oh, not so bad.
Yeah, you're buttering me up, but that's okay. How do you happen to be working in Guatemala? How did that all come about?
Well, I started in 1997, and I wound up working with a group that was doing conservation-based work, and I pretty quickly realized that the areas where we were working, people had little to no access to healthcare services and were living in pretty meager conditions and suffering from some of the most basic health problems of malnutrition, lack of access to water, diarrheal diseases, sort of the really, really the basics. And wound up getting interested in trying to find out what could be done to try and help the situation.
Mm-hmm. Well, mostly, I guess what I was getting at is most of the health practitioners I know are doctors and nurses, and they do it right here in the United States. How did you happen to wind up in Guatemala working on health issues?
Yeah, well, I guess I took a different approach, not coming from the health standpoint, but becoming more interested in culture and environmental conditions, and then from that, seeing that really health is such a fundamental concern, and that's more immediate than some of the other interests.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did Guatemala, as opposed to Bangladesh or Angola or something like that? Is it Guatemala you chose for some specific reason, or was it just fortuitous?
I think it was really luck. I guess probably because it's pretty close. It's a neighbor, and I speak Spanish, so that helped in limiting the number of countries that I could have gone to.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk a little about your book, as we should, Sickness and Wealth. It's a series of essays under the subtitle of The Corporate Assault on Global Health. Most people associate bad health and lack of access to medical care and preventative medicine and all of that as a symptom of poverty. And Jesus said the poor will always be with us, so it's we kind of cluck our tongues, but kind of take it for granted that the Guatemalan Malans and the Angolans and the Bangladeshi will have bad medical care. But you're saying that there's a little bit something more structural to this.
Right. We start off the book by looking at the history of health and development strategies and basically look at colonialism and how that initially set up this difference between the first world and third world countries and how the imbalance began by extracting resources, in the case of Africa, slaves, and the country's opportunities for progress. And then there were other forms of more or less the same line of structural imbalance of some of the major organizations, international organizations, such as the International Monetary Fund and the World Bank, that have set up policies that have poor countries indebted to the first world, and in addition to that, there are new types of agreements, such as trade agreements, that have had that imbalance persist. So, in terms of countries' abilities to develop, it's been a long process of imbalance, and it persists today.
Now, you talk about, or in the description of you in the book you co-edited, Sickness and Wealth, Meredith Fort, you talk about alternative primary health care. Is that in terms of alternative medicine, or just or explain what that is? Because I guess embedded in my question is whether or not we should be looking for these third world poorer countries to be striving for a medical system like ours, or are there other ways to go?
Right. That's a very good question. Well, primary health care came up as an idea in a UNICEF and a World Health Organization conference in 1978, which was called Alma-Ata. And the idea that was put forth there is health is a basic human right, and that health should be provided for all. And the way to do it is to provide something that's called primary health care. And what happened very soon after that conference is that countries really wound up, just as I mentioned, the debt that they were in, they wound up finding they had really limited resources to be able to put into health. And so they wound up doing very limited health care, of providing really very, very minimal services. And that that idea has really continued for the last about 20 years or so. And so what countries like Guatemala have done is they've said, well, we can't actually pay healthcare workers in rural areas, so we'll just have volunteers do the work. And we can't provide services for everybody, so we'll just do it for women and children, and men and elderly people and teenagers will basically have to go without without coverage. And so the idea that the Instancia has come up with in Guatemala is coming up with a proposal that really does have that idea of health should be a basic human right for everybody, and that basic services that are not enough, that it should be comprehensive care. And there was a group of people that came up with their own proposal locally within Guatemala, and I've done some work in supporting that effort. And it's, for me, it's very inspiring, seeing the really limited, low-resource services are not enough. We need to be providing really universal and comprehensive care.
But you must be, in terms of that, I mean, it's good to have goals and visions, but in Guatemala, countries like that, you must be very, very far away from that.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very early on in at this point, this alternative proposal that has been developed is in just an initial phase of demonstrating that it works, and then trying to encourage the government to accept it, and of course increase the amount of funds that they put in.
Is there a dollar figure on that? If someone came to you, Meredith Fort, and said, "I have this plan for, along with a lot of other people, for Guatemala to bring them basic decent health care," is there a dollar figure, or could you pluck one out of the air just in real general terms?
Sure. What the government has currently been spending per person is $5, and that really has not been enough. And as I mentioned, it was really focused services just for certain people, not for the population as a whole. And so the amount that's in this proposal that's being recommended is between $10 and $15 per person.
Which comes out to, for the population, just a ballpark figure. I want to kind of get on to where money resides in this on this planet, because the name of your book is Sickness and Wealth, and the connection between availability to health care and the lack of funds. So, I mean, we're talking maybe in the 50 million, say, would that be a year or something like that?
We're talking in the millions.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's really not, you know, the amount that you have to spend for really good comprehensive care is not that much, but it is a lot more than what is being spent right now.
So in other words, a Bill Gates or one of the Walton kids could write a check, essentially, for the decent health care. I guess what I'm getting at, and this is, tell me if I'm going in the wrong direction, that there is a direct connection between the concentration of wealth in the hands of a small number of people and the northern tier countries and the lack of access to medical care for the rest of the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the topics that we do try and emphasize in the book, is that it is this inequity that exists between countries and also within countries. You know, even within a country like Guatemala, if there really were an interest between the sort of the elite, very wealthy families who are mostly in the government, if there really were an interest in providing basic human rights and services to people, it could be done.
Mm-hmm. Are people sicker now in third world countries than they were before colonialism and imperialism came to dominate their regions?
That is a hard question to answer.
Well, you have a. I was looking at this one essay that I haven't read yet by one of your co-editors, Oscar Gish, "The Legacy of Colonial Medicine." I was going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think it's a very good and important question to ask, and what colonial medicine, the sort of the basic the model that was set up, was really set up for people from the first world countries that went to the colonies. So it really was designed for their interests, and so there was really very little care that was provided to the general population. Although there always have been traditional healers and midwives and other types of care that has been provided internally, but in terms of some of the kind of major problems that we've seen recently, is I guess one of the most well known and biggest examples is the AIDS crisis. I mean, there's been a really dramatic rise. And that's clearly a major problem right now. And also malaria is on the increase as well.
Is this worldwide or in Guatemala now?
This is speaking worldwide. Yeah,
it certainly is. Now, one of the things I was thinking that has certainly changed since the arrival of the Europeans, or the European invasion in the beginning as early as the 16th century in the Americas, was that there wasn't this large concentration of populations in cities, which, of course, has always been a breeding ground for mass illnesses and having them sometimes go unchecked. Even European cities like the bubonic plague and all of that. Do you operate in Guatemala in cities or in rural areas or both?
At this point, the coalition that exists is a national-wide coalition that has representatives from urban areas and rural areas. And the problems are different. Certainly, the rural areas, it's really sort of having access to land and water and sort of the basics, and the access is much less. And households are really dispersed. And then in urban areas, there's other types of problems. You talked about the plague, but now it's more of it's crime and violence and drug addiction and more of urban problems that require responses that are not just providing healthcare mm-hmm. services, but that really do have a big effect on health.
Well, Meredith Ford, I suspect without asking that you're there and act out of reasons of compassion. Are there things that on a regular basis just break your heart or make you angry because you know that with some simple intervention, just a small amount of funding, that what you've seen would not have occurred?
Yeah, I think really the hardest thing to see is children who don't have enough food to eat. I think that is probably the most heartbreaking. And you know, holding children in your arms that weigh way next to nothing, just knowing that could so easily be prevented.
You know, I was thinking, I had a little ear infection the other day, and naturally, with my health insurance, I went to my doctor, and he said, oh, you have, an ear infection. I forget the name of it. But they gave me a little antibiotic, and it went away. And I said, do I have to use this stuff? And he said, well, this can simply cure it, but if you don't put this in there, you could stand the chance of going deaf.
Mm-hmm.
I suspect that this medicine is probably not available to any of the people that you deal with. So, I mean, it is, I suspect, these little simple ailments that we take for granted that we're going to have treated, that is just not there for the poor of the world. Probably the poor of the U.S.
Right, exactly. Yeah. That is exactly what I was going to say, that, you know, in the U.S., and it's pretty shocking to... Mm-hmm. to know that over 40 million people don't have access to healthcare services, and there's so many people throughout the world that also do not have access to really very, very basic treatments that have been around for a long time.
Mm-hmm. My guest is Meredith Fort. She's one of the editors of Sickness and Wealth, The Corporate Assault on Global Health. It's published by South End Press. You can go to southendpress.org. I'll also have a link to this on my website, peterwerby.com. Actually, we haven't spent much time, and I'm almost giving credence to the idea that the poor have always been with us, and we often see... what's that woman who always wants us to adopt children in another country or send money, which is, you know, decent enough, but it certainly never changes the equation that goes on forever. Why are corporations, you're saying the corporate assault on global health, what role or what responsibility for the state of misery do corporations play?
We, in the book, we try and highlight some of the specific corporations, like the pharmaceutical industry, which is has a more obvious link to people's living with in poor conditions of health. I guess one of the best examples of the pharmaceutical industry is the AIDS epidemic, where 95% of the people that are living with HIV/AIDS do not have access to treatment because they're not able to afford medicines. So that, I think, is a really clear example. There's also more of the structural setup that we talked a little bit about mm-hmm. in the beginning, that corporations have a major role in terms of, I guess, the example of trade agreements is a good one. They really design policies that benefit them so that people don't have access to basic services like health care because of the policies that are put in place that allow for the corporations to grow and for the public interest to shrink.
Now, you know, I just noticed this. I didn't see this page before, but one of your co-editors passed away this year, Oscar Gish, and you dedicate the book to him. So that's we could probably do similarly for this broadcast as well. So in his memory, you are also have written this book, The Struggle for People's Health. Or, I'm sorry, the one above that, The Battle Against Global AIDS, which you mentioned earlier. But in this section, how economic globalization policies affect health, and you talk about South Africa, or the authors of the essays do, South Africa's cholera epidemic, the re-globalization of malaria, and then you talk about AIDS. We tend to associate these diseases, the first two at least, with like the 19th century and the early 20th century. Why are they back with us? And what role do they play, as we were talking earlier, about the corporate assault on global health?
Right. Well, really, I guess we associate them as historical diseases, but they really are diseases of poverty. One of the chapters that you mentioned is about the cholera epidemic in South Africa, and that was basically a result of privatizing water. And so by charging people for water, and they didn't have the money to pay for it, they started looking to unclean sources of water, and there was an outbreak of cholera. And in much of the world there still is cholera, but having that direct link to privatization is pretty shocking.
Mm-hmm. It is. In fact, maybe you could describe the photograph on the front cover of your book, Sickness and Wealth. It's funny, you know, I saw it and I almost thought it was, this may sound strange to you, because it's a well-done photograph. I said, oh, that's a well-done photograph. And then what's so hard for us to do is to place ourselves in that situation and try to realize what it would mean to us to be living out, acting out what the young woman in the photograph is doing. Can you tell us that and place it geographically as well? I couldn't do that.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, the photograph is of a woman who is cleaning her dishes in one of the most polluted rivers in the world. She's in Nepal. And I know I've, to some extent, had the situation of having to only have unclean water in some of the villages that I've gone to in Guatemala. And it really is, I mean, you wind up getting sick. And you use whatever resources are available, and for many people, what is available is unclean water. There's also tremendous pollution in the air, and you wind up it winds up being inevitable that you become sick.
Mm-hmm. The water, the struggle for public access, free public access to water, is something that is unfortunately pretty far below the radar. I have a couple of friends that consider themselves water activists, have even been to conferences like in India. And when you start realizing the extent to which water systems are being bought up, and then particularly the poor of the world, I mean, we pay for water here in the States, but these are people that once had free access to water, that now their meager incomes, many of which are dropping, are hit even harder by having to pay for one of the main ingredients of being able to stay alive. I'm looking at our clock. We don't have much time. Fortunately, there's a section, because all of this is pretty depressing stuff we should know about, by the way, in your last section called Mobilizing for Health, and you're one of the co-authors of one of the articles there, Meredith Fort. I always ask people this. I mean, I tend to almost get hopeless, yet mostly people like you say you can't give up hope. I suspect you feel that way.
Yes, I do, and I think for me what has been so inspiring is seeing the work that people have done in Guatemala and coming up with alternatives and realizing that there are so many people who really are making an effort and trying to ensure access to water, ensure access to health care, and trying to really promote social justice. And we wanted to make sure that the book didn't end on such a sad, depressing note, because it can stop you from trying to do anything. And so we did put together a resource guide and tried to include some of the many efforts that are underway around the world. And one of them that we do highlight is something that's called the People's Health Movement, which started in Bangladesh in 2000 out of an assembly that was really promoting this idea of health for all, and that it is something that should be achieved.
Well, thank you, Meredith Fort. Meredith Fort is the co-editor, along with Marianne Mercer, the late Oscar Gish, of the South End Press book, Sickness and Wealth, The Corporate Assault on Global Health. I don't have time to read the whole quote, but Paul Farmer, MD, founding director of Partners in Health, said, the reading classes are now learning what the world's bottom billion have long been forced to know. There's so much more in there for us to know as first world privileged people. I highly recommend this. Meredith Fort, thank you so much for joining me on the Peter Werby Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to WRIF.com. This is WRIF.com. You're listening to WRIF.com.
WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit.
Now, would you like to hear a little something in your sack this Halloween?
This Wednesday night at Wild Woody's in Roseville. Join the Duck, Doug Podell from 101 WRIF for Wild Woody's 10th annual Halloween costume party. Plus, Wild Woody's live rock series continues with very special guest Detroit's heavy metal horror show, Halloween. Halloween. It's an intimate and scary acoustic set from Halloween live at Wild Woody's. It's an intimate and scary acoustic set from Halloween live. Check out the girls from Wild Woody's decked out in their Halloween hottest. Dressed to impress, there's prizes for best and sexiest costumes. Plus, Wild Woody's sexy waitstaff will scare you stiff with $1 bottle beer specials and $2 Jaeger, Cuervo, and lemon drops throughout the night. Come all dressed up and ready to party at Wild Woody's. Then get up close and personal with the Motor City's own Halloween. Hey, come on. If the Grim Reaper parties, he'd come here. Come check it out for yourself if you dare. This Wednesday night, Wild Woody's 10th annual Halloween costume party with special guest Detroit's own Halloween. Only at Wild Woody's in Roseville. On Gratiot, just minutes from 696 or I-94 in downtown Roseville.
When my son started having behavior problems, the total transformation techniques were like the instruction manual on how to deal with him. We got immediate results.
Ever wish your kid came with an instruction manual when he's disrespectful, defiant, or even abusive? Do you know how to fix it? I'm behavioral therapist James Lehman, and I'll show you how to change your child's behavior right now with the Total Transformation. The program then helps you fix every behavior problem under the sun. Defiance, backtalking, lying, acting out in school, even problems with ADD and ADHD. There's no screaming, no fighting, no frustration. The Total Transformation is the program I've used for over 30 years to solve even the worst behavior problems. Your child will listen to you again, and you'll get peace and sanity back into your home. I guarantee it.
Call now and get How to Turn Your Child's Attitude Around in 1 minute or less free with your order. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185. Call now. 1-800-325-2185. 1-800-325-2185.
Here's a question. What are you worth? I mean, what are you worth in the job market? What skills and knowledge do you possess that create value for a company? Do you have what it takes for employers to pay you $65,000 a year on average? Do you have what it takes to start right out of school making $30,000 or $40,000 a year? Have you positioned yourself in the fastest growing industry rated by the United States federal government? Good questions. Tough answers. If you're stuck making less than $45,000 a year with no way to increase your income, it's time to visit computertraining.com. Log on to their website at www.computertraining.com and find out why their graduates are living their dreams by making an investment in themselves for a better tomorrow today. Please note up front that not everyone is qualified. You'll need to demonstrate that you have solid computer skills and a sincere desire to succeed in order to be accepted into their new Microsoft XP program. To learn more, visit www.computertraining.com and take the online entrance challenge. Again, that's computertraining.com, helping you build a better tomorrow today. Computertraining.com does not guarantee job placement or job salary levels. Pay scales can be dramatically affected by employer size, industry, employee credentials, years of experience, and other factors.
Take the 2 and 2 for tea, just me for you, and you
would love the double from Chase, why not make it pasta for two? Or sushi for two? Because whatever your favorite restaurant is, now you can enjoy it twice as much. Just pick up the tab with your Chase Rewards credit card, and you can earn double rewards now through December 31st. Plus, with love the double from Chase, get double rewards on gas, grocery, and drugstore purchases, too. With double the cash back, double the travel points, and double the great stuff, T for Two just got twice as exciting. Call 1-800-YOU-CHOOSE or visit chase.com/lovethedouble. Your choice, your Chase.
T for Two and two for T-A-L-O.
Offer good through 12/31/05 at retail locations that classify their merchant location for Visa and MasterCard as restaurants, gas stations, grocery stores, and drugstores. Certain earning restrictions apply. For questions and to determine eligibility, call the number on the back of your credit card. Your account must be open and not in default.
The great plays! Incredible comebacks!